Rob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to go to Ohio and check out what's going on in Columbus as thousands of workers are crowding into their capital in Columbus, protesting what, again, another one of these insane right-wing ideologues trying to steal workers' rights. Another one of these guys and his minions, again, doing what the people of Wisconsin have been fighting. It has now moved to Ohio. We're going to get a couple of reports from the folks on the ground there in Ohio as to what's going on and what we can do to help. In the second hour, we're going to talk with Andy Hoover, legislative director from the ACLU, about the voucher thing that passed today. Last night, we talked with Senator Dalen Leach about the impending passage of this insane piece of legislation, and it has passed out of the Education Committee. A couple of weird little quirky things that happened today in the committee meeting. We will talk with Andy Hoover about that. Also, Tom Jerovic, author, singer, songwriter, professor, going to talk about, why all the stuff against public employees? Why them? Why now? And in the third hour, Frank Emspeck from Workers Independent News will be giving us a report from Madison, Wisconsin, about how things are going there. And I got to tell you, the more I'm looking, the crazier it seems. From all indications I'm hearing from Washington, they're saying that they're trying to pull Walker back from the edge, and nobody can get him back. And what they're afraid of, and I think what a lot of insiders are afraid of, and actually what I've been kind of hoping for, is that the Tea Party has pushed these people so far off to the edge, so far down the road that they can't turn around. That there's no way of coming back from crazy, because crazy knows no bounds. Insane knows no bounds. And this is what we're seeing, and which is why last night I played the clip of Senator Bennett from Utah saying, when Reagan was president, he got the majority of what he wanted, and there was compromise and there was give and take. There's none of that today. And, you go and you look at what some other bills that were offered by folks in Wisconsin, the maybe one of the sane Republicans who said, look, we're going to ask for a bunch back from the public sector unions, and they're willing to give it. Let's take it and move on. And you've got Walker who's saying that's not enough. We want it all. And he believes that they've got the numbers, they've got the power, and they're just going to steamroll. They're going to steamroll, folks. And if you look at what he's doing, yesterday in the Capitol, they're bolting windows shut so that food can't come in to feed the people who are staying there because the police refuse to kick them out. Today, a judge has issued an injunction from them kicking the people out and keeping the place closed, even though they're saying, we're going to We're gonna hold off as long as we can. As of right now, the state of Wisconsin, the governor is not obeying the injunction. It's really a really bizarre scenario out there. And this is how far the radical right of the Republican Party has gotten. So I'm asking my Republican friends, you need to get involved in your party and bring them back to sanity. You need to start calling people and saying, you know what, over here. The path is over this way. That insane road you're taking is going to harm this country irreparably. And again, you look at what's going on in Wisconsin, and it's insane. You look at what's going on in Ohio. These folks have no barometer of where they're going. All they know is their blind faith ideology, and they think that this is their moment. They've been whispering to each other in their little think tanks, and they've been, you know, snickering to each other in the cloakroom. And now they think, hey, now we can say this stuff out loud. Now's our time. And you're only going to get one shot at this, and they know that. They know they're only going to get one shot at railroading this country down the road. And they're going to take it. And it's going to be an all-or-nothing venture. So what's going to have to happen? What has to happen is what happened in Wisconsin and Madison when we were there on Saturday. Somewhere between 100 and 150,000 people crammed the Capitol area. There was virtually no room to move. That's what has to happen. People have to come out. Citizens have to come out and tell their government what's what. So you see these polls coming out, and there's a bunch of them. Because this whole thing in Wisconsin has been played as the only important part of the thing is collective bargaining. And originally that was the spark that sent people into the streets. But as the folks started opening the bill and started turning the pages going, oh my God, on the next page, oh my goodness, holy, whoa, each page getting worse and worse as you look at the things, the massive overreach. That this guy and the Republicans wanted to pull, and it's made them resolved. But for me, you know, this is something that I've been waiting for years, having that conversation about collective bargaining, about labor unions. And an interesting poll, the New York Times CBS poll, came out, and they wrote a piece about it over at the Times. They write, as battles erupt in state capitals around the nation, a majority of Americans say they oppose efforts to weaken collective bargaining rights for public employees unions and are also against cutting the pay and benefits of public workers to reduce state budget deficits. That's their latest poll. Now, here's the weird part. They write that labor unions are not exactly popular. A third of those surveyed are favorable. They're in favor of labor unions. A quarter, unfavorable. And the rest either were undecided or hadn't heard enough about them. Now, they've been around for 100 and some years. I don't know how you could have missed that on the page. But this, to me, is an opportunity. This is an opportunity. Understand, the right has spent untold amounts of money. They have spent massive fortunes convincing workers that unions are bad for them. They have spent billions of dollars propping up the right-wing talk machine to keep bashing labor. Oh, those unions are just lazy and stupid and rah, rah, rah. Yet only a quarter of the population has bought into what they're selling. A third of the population's in favor. Oh, yeah. People like me. That massive part in the middle. Those are the folks that you want to talk to. Those are the people that you want to have an opportunity with. And, you know, the more I look at this, there's an opportunity to reach out to people. And if you look at the latest Pew research poll of the people in Wisconsin who favored in public employee unions over the governor, 42-31. So 42% of the people were on the favor of on the side of employee unions, 31% on Walker's side. But when you dug a little bit deeper, and they did a little bit of this, in the 18 to 29 area, probably the lowest sector, the lowest age group of unionization in the country, it had a 46-13% approval. I mean, that to me is massive. Among non-whites, it expanded to 51% to 19%. Of those who made less than $75,000, 48% in favor of unions, 25% in favor of walkers. So you're seeing this opportunity. And this is, I think, what labor has been waiting for. This has been the moment that they've been dreaming of. When you're going to have workers who are willing to listen, that you've had this moment. And this is that moment in history. And Walker, I'm sure, doesn't want to be the guy remembered as the person who sparked unionization, who sparked collective bargaining, but he's going to be. The second he said he was going to call out the National Guard, the second he said he was going to get rid of all those people and he was going to steal collective bargaining rights, he became that guy in history. He is now marked because I got to be honest. You know, the reality is I haven't heard the word collective bargaining as many times as I have in this last week in my whole life. And this is a good thing. This is an education moment. So what happens from here? What do folks do? Because obviously they're not buying the rights argument anymore. Obviously they're not in tune with what the right-wing talking heads are spewing for them. And that is, well, it's those government employees. It's those workers who crashed the economy. We all know that's not true. We know what crashed our economy. Irresponsibility on Wall Street. Bankers who thought that mortgages could be gambled with. Investment houses that thought they were banks. Banks who thought they were casinos. That's what got us into this mess. And David Lenhart, he writes over at the New York Times, he pointed this out, and it's right there. Fat and happy government workers, however easy the caricature may be, not the cause of our looming federal and state deficits. And he writes, neither are spineless politicians. The cause is Americans' collective desire for lower taxes and generous government benefits. We want our politicians to promise us tax cuts, a strong military, safe streets, good schools, and unchanged Medicare and Social Security, and promise it all they do. Eventually, he writes, we will have to pay for the government we want, regardless of what happens in Wisconsin. And that, again, is something I've been saying for some time. We need to raise revenue. The Republicans keep saying, oh, it's spending. We're irresponsible. All these government programs and all this spending. Spending, spending, spending. Yet they're having a hard time coming anywhere near their promised cuts. And why is that? Because you and I want government services. We understand that it makes our life better. Now we have to pay for it. And what's gone on in this country for way too long is we have handed too much to those who already have too much. At some point, the Buffetts, the Gates, the Teppers, the Kochs, the Scaifes, all of these folks who have been funding these programs, all of these folks who have been reaping a massive untold wealth, eventually you're going to have to pay their toll. And people like Warren Buffett want to pay their toll. So I say we let him. And I say we encourage our politicians to say, you know what, let's at least go back to a little sanity. You know, maybe the Clinton years where it was 39% top marginal rate. I'm even in favor of going back to that good socialist taxing president, that good tax and spend president Ronald Reagan, who had a 50% rate when he took office. Or maybe the really good socialist of Dwight David Eisenhower. Who knows? Might be a great idea. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. State Capitol Police in Madison, Wisconsin have tightened security, and protester presence was considerably smaller inside the building on Monday in advance of Governor Scott Walker's budget address on Tuesday. Only people with appointments to see their legislators were allowed in Monday, but protest signs remained up throughout the rotunda area. Wisconsin's 14 Democratic state senators are steadfast in blocking the bill, gutting collective bargaining for public workers, despite threats from Governor Walker to lay off thousands of people. As Republican attacks on public workers, their collective bargaining rights, wages, and benefits continue around the nation, working families inspired by Wisconsin's movement are rallying to defend themselves. WIND correspondent Dave Goodman reports on a Boston rally held Saturday in solidarity with Wisconsin.
With music provided by a local activist marching band, labor leaders and social justice activists called upon demonstrators to remember, as the head of the Massachusetts Teachers Association put it, an attack on collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin is an attack on workers everywhere. Reverend Fred Small, minister of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church in Cambridge, said issues of political and economic importance to workers are also moral issues, and asked,
"Is our democracy for sale to the highest bidder? Will we be ruled by those who, in Oscar Wilde's words, know the price of everything and the value of nothing?"
Groups such as Mass Jobs with Justice pledged to continue their loud support for living wage jobs, union representation, and affordable health care for all workers.
Indiana working families are entering their ninth day of protests at the state capitol there. Indiana AFL-CIO spokesman Jeff Harris says Democrats in the Indiana legislature are still boycotting sessions, hoping to kill some anti-worker bills for this year.
There are several other bills that are still on the table, including a bill that would criminalize striking for public employees, all public employees, and if you do strike, you would forfeit your pension. There are bills that would make it illegal for public entities to collect union dues for their employees. We are inspired by what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin, and don't think it would be possible to have made this happen in Indiana without what has happened in Wisconsin. It's an empowering movement, and it's showing the world that average people, working people, can form together, stand up, and have their voices heard. And we are committed to staying here until the last bill dies. We are not going away. We've defeated three bills already just by our sheer numbers and our sheer presence, and we're going to stay here as long as we need to, and we know the people of Wisconsin well.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Now from the Washington Post today. During a state house interview marked by the sound of, you know, those pesky protesters, those people outside screaming that they want their rights, Ohio Senate President Tom Niehaus said, "It's great to see so many people willing to come out and get heard, but it doesn't affect our resolve." So basically what he told the thousands of people in Columbus, Ohio today is basically screw you. We don't care what you people want. We have our ideology. And I guess what would you expect from our friends in the Republican Party? To find out what's going on the ground, I got Mickey Spurgo. He's on the ground in Columbus, Ohio. Mickey, what's going on there tonight?
Well, it's calmed down right now. We were at the rally today, and the numbers were legit. There was a good 15 to 20,000 folks out on the lawn. Now, they kept coming in and out. Folks would take off work, come in. So the crowds were steady at around 15,000 today, and they had their voices heard today.
So what do you think the Ohio Senate President Tom Niehaus saying, you know, it's great that they came out, but we don't care what they have to say. We're going to do what we want to do anyway.
Well, I mean, he can say that, but by seeing the resolve of these folks in Ohio, they're dug in also, and they're going to do what they have to do. They're going to, if it does get passed tomorrow, they're going to get a ballot. They're going to put a ballot resolution to put it on the ballot. They're poised and ready to get the 220,000 signatures that'll put it on the ballot. And look, they took polls. There was polls up and down the papers I read here today. everywhere from 60 to 70% of people in Ohio that are totally against what they're doing. So if this does get on the ballot as a ballot referendum, it's definitely going to fail on their end.
You know, I look at this and I say, you know, I understand the right-wing extreme, the Tea Party mentality. I get it, but at some point, don't you have to wake up and see what reality has in store for you? Because I think this is going to be their demise.
And you know what? They put an amendment to the bill today, which you want to talk about outrage, which took away the binding arbitration right to the police officers and firefighters today. So they just didn't stop with the public employees as a whole. They went after the police and firefighters directly today. And if you would have seen the firefighters at the rally today and the police officers, which, by the way, some of them supported this guy, you would see that it's starting to come a little unwound for them. And they're, some of the Republicans are getting a little squeamish today. Some did turn, but not enough. I think they probably got the votes to pass it through. But like I said, they're going to get this on the ballot. And I think their resolve to put it on there, they will make it. And it will get shot down in Ohio. And it's just an amazing to see this many people coming together.
You know, I got to tell you, Mickey, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, the Republicans ran on the platform that they were going to create jobs, that they, you know, they weren't going to be as divisive as those Democrats were. And yet all I see is insanity coming out of these people. It makes no sense to me.
And you saw what happened in Wisconsin today. They even tried to shut them out of their own capital, where a judge says, you can't do that. You've got to open the doors. I mean, it's just amazing where these capitals are supposed to be for the people, you know, by the people, for the people, and yet they want to shut out the protesters because they're with organized labor. Just amazing.
It is. You know, we were in Madison for a week. We were there for the big protest, 100,000 to 150,000 people in the streets. I got to be honest, probably the most peaceful environment I've ever been in. In fact, I was looking for Indian thugs, and all I found was a grandmother handing out cookies and muffins. In Ohio, you know, and I'm from Cleveland, and I, you know, I've proudly worn the moniker of Union Thug occasionally. Is it as friendly there in Columbus?
Oh, very peaceful, very peaceful, and I think that frustrates them. A matter of fact, it wasn't just union workers today, and this is the first time I've seen clergy. I mean, a lot of clergy members there today supporting the workers. You know, and we're from Pennsylvania. Our group there said, about time. I mean, we saw priests, we saw of all denominations there today supporting the workers, which was nice to see. And it's long overdue that other groups start joining the labor protesters, because what they're doing is totally wrong. It's against most religions if you see what they're doing. And it's about time that they've joined the fight.
You know, I've seen yesterday, I saw something was passed, and maybe you'll have a little bit of insight for me, that they passed a bill to do away with PLAs and prevailing wage in building contracts. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, well, why would you do something that stupid? Because that's what's actually creates a building construction industry in your state, keeps it healthy, keeps it vibrant. And actually, to be honest, the prevailing wage helps keep industry in your state. Why would you want to get rid of that?
Well, like the president of the AFL-CIO in Ohio said today, he said, look, this isn't about, you know, budgets. This isn't about anything. This is payback time in Ohio. I mean, he's coming after every union. It doesn't matter who you are. They're coming after him. They want to basically silence them. They want to make sure that the roads to re-elections for all of them will be paved. And if they can silence the labor movement, they have taken a major obstacle, you know, out of the way for all of them to be re-elected. They know that, and I think everybody here knows that, and that's why this is so important in Columbus.
You know, and that's an excellent point you make, Mickey, because, you know, in Wisconsin, I don't know if you – I'm sure you heard the Coke Walker phone call.
Oh, yes.
Where he basically came out and pretty much said what we all knew, but just confirmed what we already knew, that this was political payback. Nothing more, nothing less, had nothing to do with budgets, had nothing to do with the health of the state. It had everything to do with killing a political enemy.
And that's what it's all about. It really, really has nothing to do with the budget, especially here in Ohio. If I'm talking with the folks here, it has nothing to do with the budget. What's ironic, this wouldn't even take effect till 2012. A lot of folks don't know that, what they're trying to do. So how is it fixing the budget this year? Just look at everything he's doing. It has nothing to do with what he says. It has everything to do with breaking these unions. It has everything to do with silencing these voices. And today they were heard. I was impressed. Being from Pennsylvania, we've had our rallies. We've been there. But I was very impressed with what they did today. It was, like you said, very peaceful, very well organized, and their messages were heard inside those chambers.
Let me ask you this, because I said in Wisconsin when I talked to folks there, this is the front line of the class war. This is the place where we stop these type of assaults, or it's the first in the domino that takes us all down. I saw Wisconsin, Ohio as the dominoes coming to Pennsylvania. In looking at what's going on, do you think this is going to be stopped here?
Well, it's hard to say, but you're absolutely right. The fights are state by state, but this is more of a national issue than more than people think. I mean, the battles are going to be fought in every individual state. They had a game plan. They're following their game plan, and I'm surprised that people are surprised what they're doing. Because I'm not as surprised as a lot of folks. They said that a lot of times they were going to do this in some of those states. So their game plan is to take each individual state, you know, try to divide the unions, try to beat the unions. And if they get them to fall, of course it'll come to Pennsylvania. Of course it's going to come to some of the other states. You know, if they can take us out in Wisconsin, Indiana, you know, Ohio, sure, by all means. Now, we're a little different animal in Pennsylvania. I think we've got a lot of the, like you said, the Tea Party crazies, like they have in some of these states. We got a lot more moderate Republicans, you know, that will support us in the state of Pennsylvania. And I think a lot of folks know that. Look, you can take Ohio and see how they were unified today, okay? You can take Wisconsin and see how they're unified. I just got a feeling if this were to come to Pennsylvania, you magnify it by threefold. If that's what they want, I think the workers of Pennsylvania will be ready.
I sure hope so. And I guess the question that you kind of answered it, but do you think that this is going to be that epiphany that union workers have, that moment of clarity where, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, I'm not sure if you know, but 51% of union members voted for Pat Toomey.
Yes.
A good number of union members voted for Tom Corbett. I'm sure in Ohio, a good number of union members voted for John Kasich. Are you starting to see people who are having buyer's remorse?
Well, they had a guy spoke today. They actually had a union member speak today who voted for this governor because he said he didn't know that he would be this radical in his approach. He said, and he got up and apologized to all those people today and said, "I'm sorry, I'm a registered Republican. I voted for this guy. I didn't know he was going to do what he's doing." And I think you're seeing that in a lot of places. But let me say this. You know, it seems that the labor movement has come full circle. You know, back in the 60s, you know, we fought these same battles. We had to fight for every inch of survival. It seems we've come to that point again, and this may be one of the best things that ever happened to organized labor and to the middle class and to the working families of this country. Maybe it is the wake-up call that we've all been waiting for, because it seems to be unifying. If you saw today, they came from Toledo, you know, Cincinnati, Cleveland. They came from all over. And to see that kind of unification, and then remember, this was a Tuesday, so most of them had to take off work to be here. So to see that kind of unification, maybe we have come full circle, and maybe this is the wake-up call that everybody's been waiting for.
I'm sure hoping, because, you know, at the end of the day, and I've said this a number of times on the program, it's about your job. And I vote pocketbook issues first and foremost. All of those divisive things that the Republicans use to slice and dice us don't mean all that much to me. I can deal with those in my home. I'm hoping, I really am hoping that people will take this and say, finally, we know what the Republican Party is all about.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they came in and said they were going to be moderates. They're not moderates. I mean, we all know that now. I mean, if we did, we believed a lot of our members and a lot of Democrats believed in what the Tea Party was saying. And, you know, now they don't. Now they saw what these folks are really like. They saw what they really want, and it's all about power. That you can just sum it up in one word. It's all about power, and that they're looking to keep it.
So last minute I got for you. Where is this go? Where is this going tomorrow? What's going to happen towards the weekend? Your thoughts?
Tomorrow they're going to be pushing the bill through. It looks like they're going to vote on it at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. there's going to be another rally. They moved the bill back today, from today because of so many people. There's what a lot of folks thought. So tomorrow they'll push the bill through, and then the real fight starts in Ohio. That's when they'll start working to get these petitions going. They'll start the door-to-door to get people to sign the petitions to make it a ballot referendum, and that's where the real fight will be.
Any chance of Wisconsin, the fabulous 14 who took off to Illinois, any chance of any Democratic maneuvering?
Well,
or in Ohio, do they have such an overwhelming
number? They don't have that same type. The one guy told us today, no, we can't run to the safe haven of Illinois. They don't have that type of laws as far as the, you know, a quorum, and they just got the numbers right now, so they can't pull that one off. But the Democrats, watching the news tonight, they said they're going to try to drag it as much as they can with questions, but it will go to vote tomorrow by the looks of things.
And that, as you've said, it will be when the real fight begins. Mickey,
yes,
I appreciate
it. And they made it perfectly clear, Rick, that this fight's not done after tomorrow. That's only the beginning of the fight, and that's where labor's always done its best. So it's, you know, it's put up or shut up time.
It's back up against the wall. Tomorrow night, can you give us a call back and let us know what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll get somebody to give you a call. I'm heading back to Pennsylvania tomorrow, but we'll give somebody that's going to be on the ground here to give you a call.
Thank you so much, Mickey. I appreciate it. You know, I look at this, and I got to tell you, it's exciting times. It's going to give us the opportunity to stand up, unite, fight back against, you know, really something very toxic. But again, I think it's going to educate. It's going to be that moment that the Republicans weren't planning on. They were not planning on giving this educational moment, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Dan Snyder is stamping his tiny little feet and having a screaming tantrum. That's unpleasant to witness when a 3-year-old does it, but it's truly troubling to see a 45-year-old billionaire owner of a pro football team throw a public hissy fit. Snyder owns the once great but now terrible Washington Redskins, whose on-field ineptness during his 10-year tenure has made long-suffering fans almost insanely mad. However, the owner's tantrum is not directed at his players or coaches, but at a local news weekly called the Washington City Paper. It dared to publish a long piece deriding Snyder himself as the source of the team's misery. "What insouciance," shrieked the Dan, as he summoned his legal team to go after the small paper. Their first tactic was raw intimidation. "Mr. Snyder has more than sufficient means to protect his reputation," the lawyer snarled at City Paper's owners, crudely implying that if they didn't give in to Mr. Redskin, he would bury them in legal costs. But City Paper didn't fall for such smack talk, so Dan pushed ahead, suing for $2 million in general damages. But his libel suit turns out to be compromised by the fact that the article in question is, well, factual. This reality led the billionaire to try a trick play, claiming that the article was an offensive, anti-Semitic diatribe against him, an assertion that an independent journalistic observer calls almost unbearably stupid. After all, Snyder's team is called Redskins, a slur that Snyder insists, quote, is not meant to be offensive whatsoever. This is Jim Hightower saying, overprivileged corporate crybabies of Dan Snyder are giving hypoxia a bad name. They denounce lawsuit abuse by anyone who dares to sue them, even as they deploy their legal departments to intimidate anyone who crosses them.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Watch the green flags tumble. Feel this town.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you don't have a phone, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You go to Ohio and you see what's going on there. Peaceful citizens marching to their capital, wanting their voices heard, and the power structure telling them, you know what? Flip off. And again, you know, you have this tension going on where the people are now speaking. They're coming together in a unified way. Poll after poll shows that people don't support this theft. It's an overreach. But they're not getting it. And you remember after the shooting of Gabby Giffords and the other folks who unfortunately lost their lives, they promised us all this. We were going to tone down the rhetoric. They changed the job killing health care bill to the job destroying health care bill. And then within a day or so, it was back to the job killing health care bill. And John Boehner, he was being interviewed by CBN's David Brody, the Christian Broadcasting Network. And I guess it's one of those moments where you go, yeah, so much for the toning down of the violent rhetoric. But he had some interesting things to say about collective bargaining. Here's one of them.
I think what you see in these states is trying to bring some balance to these negotiations.
You know, it's playing to this frame. Now, understand the frame. The frame is that these workers have all the power. We need to bring balance to the negotiations. These workers have all this power. Now, understand, state workers cannot strike. There's no strike. So, again, you go back to this idea of what leverage do you have if you can't withhold labor? Because one of the only things that workers truly have is the ability to withhold their labor. We're not going to work. Everything else is controlled by the employer. The hours, the condition, the wages, the rules, everything. Other than what you negotiate. So what he's saying is, well, you know, we don't like the bargaining that's gone on, so we need to balance the power. Having equals sitting at a table to him is not balanced. He wants to go back to the good old days. And in fact, what I find ironic is this statement, you know, again, it comes back down to, you know, toning it down a little bit.
In some of these states, you've got collective bargaining laws that are so weighted in favor of the public employees that there's almost no bargaining. You know, we've given them a machine gun, put right at the heads of the local officials, and they really have been had their hands tied.
Yeah, put a machine gun to their head, yes. Not the fact that they sat down and they negotiated a contract, which I just find amazing that, you know, the frame that we keep here is that, well, these public sector unions, they're so powerful. What they are is they're people who are united. And they're sitting down, they're saying, we want a reasonable wage. And I've yet to find any studies, and I've had this conversation with a number of people about the wage structure. Given the education, given the years of service, I'm sorry. These people are not overpaid. But that's what they want you to believe. And what they try and do is, like the guy, the right-wing nutcase I talked to on the phone yesterday, well, you know, teachers make more than I do. I took a pay cut to be a radio host. Like somehow they're on equal footing. That somehow him sitting behind a microphone is equivalent to a teacher standing in front of our future and teaching the 30 or 40 or 50 kids that are in her classroom that are the future of this country. Somehow that's the same in his mind. And he should be paid equally with her or him. Think about that for a couple minutes. You know, when we were in Wisconsin, One of the most peaceful gatherings of folks I've ever been to. I have been to a sporting event that's been that peaceful. And if you listen to Fox News, if you listen to the right-wing blowhards, it's all of this, well, there's chaos, and they're union thugs, and they're pointing their fingers at us, and they're telling us they hate us, and they're punching us, and they're hitting us. And in Wisconsin, one of these, I guess a local yokel, Fox affiliate, wanted to make a name for himself, claimed that he was punched in the arm, claimed that somebody was going to break his neck, a whole bunch of these bizarre claims. That he was repeatedly shouted down by the union thugs. And truth of the matter is, I was there. I saw the people chanting Fox lies. It's true. I mean, you got to be honest. Fox has a history of not being truthful, fair, balanced, accurate, any of those things. But yet when this guy said that he was hit and he was, you know, all this stuff, people began to question. People began to look. And now it's turned out, oops, didn't happen. None of it happened. In fact, I was in a place where the Fox camera, this guy, and I saw this guy, this Mike Tobin, with the cameraman actually walk into the crowd. And yeah, he got pushed out of the way because the crowd was walking and the Capitol was completely surrounded with people. There was no stopping. You kept moving along, and he wanted to stand in the middle of the crowd and take pictures. And I'm sorry, there's nowhere for you to go. So they kind of bumped him right out of the frame. And so to him, you know, just having stood in traffic, he must have thought that that was some kind of an assault. So he had to make a big story out of it, you know, because he wants to be somebody. Maybe he wants to go to the network. Who knows? But I'll tell you, I was there. There was no violence. There were no problems that day. None whatsoever. And this is the thing that scares the crazy right the most. That we're not the wild-eyed, violent union thugs that they thought we were. And that they've been trying to tell all of the people that we are. You know, we're cops. We're firemen. We're teachers. We're truck drivers. We're your neighbors. And they don't have an answer for that. They don't have an answer for it. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, another report from Ohio. We're back after this.
As long as my two hands are fit to use, I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, yeah, good workers, good news to you out there. Around the good old union has taken it to clear. Which side are you on?
You know, that's the question. That's the question in all of these battles. Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, you name it, that's the question. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the radical extreme right wing who wants to steal rights from people? Are you on the side of rational thought who says, you know what? If you want to take wages from people, you need to negotiate. And I look at what's going on in my home state of Ohio, and I got to be honest with you. My grandmother was a union member. My grandfather was a union member. The life that they were able to lead because of that. And my grandmother was a member of UFCW Local 880 there in Cleveland. Today she still receives a pension for the years she toiled. To take that away, to me, just seems, well, cruel, evil, sadistic, whatever word you can come up with. That's why what's going on in Ohio today just worries me to no end. That's why I've asked Travis Long. He's a member of UFCW Local 1059 there in Columbus. To talk to us about what's going on there and how it's going to affect him and his family. Travis, welcome to the program, sir.
Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm good. I got to be honest. I'm concerned about what's going on there in Columbus.
Well, that makes two of us, actually. That makes thousands and thousands of us. We've had quite a sizable crowd at the State House. So you just got back from Wisconsin. Some of the crowds you've had there make ours look like Cub Scout den meetings, but it's been pretty crazy here. Last week, they've been describing the situation as volatile and or a powder keg, but things now are more. It's honestly looking kind of amazing here because this is the most incredible display of solidarity I've seen in 13 years as a union member. So it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm saying this is going to be that spark that draws the working class together, union, non-union, skilled, unskilled, white, blue collar. I don't think it's going to matter. I think this is going to be that moment where people begin to come together. Let's talk a bit about you for a minute. You know, my grandmother and I have a soft spot in my heart for UFCW because my grandmother, you know, spent 26 years working for a small department store in Cleveland, represented by Local 880 up there to this day, 81 years old, collecting a pension, you know, doing all right thanks to that. I hate to see anybody have that taken away from them.
I agree with you. I mean, it's, you know, unions probably, you know, people are saying that unions are fading out. You know, when your grandmother, you know, it used to be a third of the workforce was in a union. It's smaller now, but you know what? Based on the crowds that we've seen in Wisconsin and here in Indiana, they truly have awakened a sleeping giant. They have not gone away, and it's inspiring to see this type of support for these job-killing legislation, you know, that's going on everywhere.
You know, when I lived in Ohio, they had union grocery stores in the area. Here in the center part of Pennsylvania, we don't have that here. At least I haven't found one. If I lived in an area, most certainly would go there. But wages, conditions, benefits, all those things you negotiate with your employer, and it works, right?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? It definitely works. I mean, I am lucky. You know, I work for Kroger, and we've had a largely very good bargaining history with them. There's been labor peace with them. It definitely works. Kroger has managed to stay competitive being a union shop. I mean, it does work, and hopefully in Pennsylvania you will eventually see that. Hopefully not a portion of the giant eagles will be organized. Hopefully all the giant eagles will be organized. You know what I mean? So, it definitely works.
So now if this passes, this bill here in Ohio, what is that going to mean to your coworkers? What's it going to mean to you and your family?
Well, on the surface, you know, people would see in the Senate Bill 5, you know, they would say, this doesn't have anything to do with you. You're a grocery worker. But I tell you what, if people think that Senate Bill 5 is the last piece of union busting legislation we're going to see, then they are crazy. If it works with Senate Bill 5, they're eventually going to come after private sector unions, and we all need to stand together. I mean, there is no difference between union workers and non-union workers. We need to all stand together, middle-class people, low-income people. This is not the last. It's just called Senate Bill 5 right now. It'll show up as another name, you know, in a couple months from now. We've had, I'll give you a quick example. I recently gave testimony in opposition to House Bill 61 that, if passed, would allow many small businesses whose employees aren't covered by union agreements to replace overtime with comp time. So now, my testimony, of course, was not well received, and one representative, a conservative, even told me in so many words, "You're in a union, you don't have to worry about this comp time, so why do you care?" And I'm just thinking, you know, it's attitudes like this that make up the thrust of all union-busting campaigns all across the country. They try and divide, you know, workers, because they know that if they do that, they take away our greatest weapon, and that is our number.
Right.
So that's,
and, you know, the thing is, you know, I look at that, and I'm not going to call him ignorant, because I know he knows better. What he is doing is he's messaging. He's saying, look, well, what do you care about? You're protected.
Absolutely.
You've got the union. Knowing that by passing something like this, he's going to put your company at a disadvantage by giving a non-union employer something better and invariably putting you out of work in the long run.
You're absolutely right. He is intelligent. There's just no compassion there. So, yep.
So, again, you know, tomorrow, I guess the bill, we had a guy earlier telling us the bill is going to be rammed through the Senate there. I guess there's going to be a big protest tomorrow. Where do you go from tomorrow on?
That's a good question. There were amendments. Apparently, the latest is that there were amendments finally proposed today. But from what I can tell, they're not. They're kind of crappy. So, I mean, I don't know where we go from here. It's not looking good, but I really don't know how to answer.
I mean, you personally, will you be part of the effort to try and put this on a ballot to make an initiative to make sure that collective bargaining is legal?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Absolutely. Whatever needs to be done, you know, we will stand up.
See, again, you know, man, I got to tell you, Travis, I see this as a massive mistake on the part of the extreme right. That
yes.
They've got. Let me ask you, how active have you been in the political realm up until this point?
Quite a bit within the last, you know, year and a half.
And how many new people are you seeing come to this this now as they've awakened, going, oh my God, that means me.
I didn't see it as much a year ago. It's honestly like been in the last month or two or three when we realized the mistake we made by electing John Kasich and, you know, his cronies. I think the realization is just now really starting to hit people, because we could make phone calls, we can knock doors, and it doesn't seem to get through to people until after they've elected the wrong person and they have buyer's remorse.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I guess you have to be beaten over the head sometimes before you realize the mistake you made.
Unfortunately.
Travis, I appreciate the information. Keep the fight up there on the ground. We are with you in heart and mind, and I know that you guys will keep up the fight out there. Thanks so much for filling us in.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. You know, I look at this again, and like I said earlier, it's one of those things that I do. I think people are going to really take to this, because when you're pushed into a corner, you've only got one way to go, and that's to fight. There's no flight in this. This is, you're going to fight for your survival or you are going to die. And as I'm seeing it, people are going to fight for their lives. They're going to do what they have to do in a peaceful manner. Now, look, you know, that can be taken in a, you know, the right wing. Oh, he's calling for violence. No, because if it turns to violence, you lose, because you lose all public support. And you look at those kids in Wisconsin. You look at the thousands of people in Ohio, the 150,000 people in Wisconsin. Very peaceful. In fact, they gave out sweet potatoes I mean, tell me what kind of a riot, what kind of chaos, what kind of a tense environment where you see somebody walking around with a big cooler full of sweet potatoes. I'm not kidding you. That's the kind of event this was. Amazing. This is an amazing time. You know, may you live in interesting times. This, my friends, very, very interesting times. Anyway, today in the Pennsylvania Senate, there was the committee hearing to push out vouchers. This is a bill that, according to the AP, that's going to require taxpayers to subsidize the education of public school students from low-income families who want to attend a different school. That's very simplistic, and thank you for making it as dumbed down as possible and as untrue as possible. Again, the students don't have the choice. They're going to have their lottery ticket. They're going to have this great lottery ticket. Woohoo! It's like I've never bought a lottery ticket, but it's like someone going to the store and buying the lottery ticket. Oh, you've got it. It's only until your number is called that you win anything. So you're going to have all these kids with these lottery tickets, with the gold ticket, and nowhere to go. Because it's for $9,000, or so they're saying. Yet, most of the very high-end private schools are in the $20,000 range. Sorry, most low-income families not going to be able to cough up the 11 grand. Most schools that are nearby, that would be probably more than that. The transportation, there's a lot here. What this is a payoff to the people who are already sending their kids to private schools. This is a massive subsidy for the wealthy. This is a theft from the poor schools. This is a theft from the working class to fill the coffers of those who are already doing very, very well. And in my opinion, this is a massive, massive mistake. And the Republicans know why they're doing it. They're doing it to fill their campaign donors' pockets. It's my problems with the Democrats. What are they thinking? And I'll tell you what they're thinking. The same thing the Republicans are thinking. It means money. You look at the campaign that Hardy Williams ran, $2 million filled his pockets to run what? The campaign, he didn't have a snowball's chance of winning? You got to wonder. And I look at this, an 8-2 vote to push the voucher bill out of the Senate Education Committee. And like we talked last night with our good friend Senator Dalen Leach, it's a bad piece of legislation, and he even believes, and I think he's right, it's unconstitutional under the Pennsylvania Constitution, because according to him, it's in there in black and white. And again, this is one of those things that I guess it's going to work itself out down the road. But to me, and you know, we've had these conversations, folks. To me, this voucher plan is nothing more than stealing from people, stealing lunch money from the kid who doesn't have it. This is nothing more than beating up the kid and taking his last nickel. We're not going to make those schools that are failing any better. You're not going to. All you're going to do is strip resources from those schools to help a very small minority, and they know that. They're saying 5% of the kids are going to take advantage of these vouchers. 5%. 5%. We're back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. State Capitol Police in Madison, Wisconsin have tightened security, and protester presence was considerably smaller inside the building on Monday in advance of Governor Scott Walker's budget address on Tuesday. Only people with appointments to see their legislators were allowed in Monday, but protest signs remained up throughout the rotunda area. Wisconsin's 14 Democratic state senators are steadfast in blocking the bill gutting collective bargaining for public workers, despite threats from Governor Walker to lay off thousands of people.
As Republican attacks on public workers, their collective bargaining rights, wages, and benefits continue around the nation, working families inspired by Wisconsin's movement are rallying to defend themselves. WIND correspondent Dave Goodman reports on a Boston rally held Saturday in solidarity with Wisconsin.
With music provided by a local activist marching band, labor leaders and social justice activists called upon demonstrators to remember, as the head of the Massachusetts Teachers Association put it, an attack on collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin is an attack on workers everywhere. Reverend Fred Small, minister of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church in Cambridge, said issues of political and economic importance to workers are also moral issues, and asked,
"Is our democracy for sale to the highest bidder? Will we be ruled by those who, in Oscar Wilde's words, know the price of everything and the value of nothing?"
Groups such as Mass Jobs with Justice pledged to continue their loud support for living wage jobs, union representation, and affordable health care for all workers.
Indiana working families are entering their ninth day of protests at the state capitol there. Indiana AFL-CIO spokesman Jeff Harris says Democrats in the Indiana legislature are still boycotting sessions, hoping to kill some anti-worker bills for this year.
There are several other bills that are still on the table, including a bill that would criminalize striking for public employees, all public employees, and if you do strike, you would forfeit your pension. There are bills that would make it illegal for public entities to collect union dues for their employees. We are inspired by what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin, and don't think it would be possible to have made this happen in Indiana without what has happened in Wisconsin. It's an empowering movement, and it's showing the world that average people, working people, can form together, stand up, and have their voices heard. And we are committed to staying here until the last bill dies. We are not going away. We've defeated three bills already just by our sheer numbers and our sheer presence, and we're going to stay here as long as we need to, and we know the people of Wisconsin well.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience,
where hard work, common sense, and rational thought
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left, rich and poverty. Bought a shirt, left a cameo, blue denim, head is big.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally and appreciate your input, thoughts, comments. Senate Republicans here in Pennsylvania have been busy little bees the past few weeks, and I guess everyone's on the menu since we don't really have a seat at the table. Week one was a nice, quick, and speedy vote to deprive women of health care access. Week two brought on the right-wing wet dream of proof of citizenship for the receipt of public benefits. And then the big, sloppy, wet kiss on Valentine's Day, Senator Brown's bill to create an internet database of state spending. And now we have vouchers. The one thing, I got to be honest, you can't call these Republicans do nothing. Maybe do nothing right. Maybe do nothing to create jobs or grow the shrinking middle class. But you can't call them do nothing. So today we saw the highly funded voucher bill, SB1, voted out of the Education Committee. Tony Williams must be so proud. Or at least the people who funded his Never Had a Snowball's Chance gubernatorial run. Must be so proud. I've got Andy Hoover on the line. He was at the Capitol today for that vote, so it's interesting to talk to him. Andy, thanks for being here.
Hey, no problem, Rich. Nice to talk to you again.
You know, I look at this, and I personally think these vouchers are a horrible idea. They're going to do nothing to help the failing schools. They're going to do nothing to help education. They're going to be a drain. Curious what your thoughts are.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, just to kind of lay it out for folks, you know, in the 30-second summary, this is a bill, SB1, that would create a voucher program. The first year, the vouchers would go to low-income students whose families make 130% of the poverty line and who are in schools that are not meeting standards. The second year goes to low-income students in school districts that have schools that are not meeting standards. And then the third year and thereafter, it goes, the vouchers would go to all low-income students. So potentially that includes kids who are in private school now. The money that, the, where they're finding the money for this is that they say the money follows the kids. So what the state would give the public school district for that student would instead go with the student to the private school. So the public school then has less resources to work with. You know, their heating bills don't change, but they now have less money.
Right. So let me ask you, Andy, as legislative director of the ACLU, why are you involved in this?
Well, the ACLU's position is a little more of a niche. It's not quite as broad as, say, the education groups, but our position is really twofold. First of all, there are not one, not two, but three different provisions of the state constitution that would make SB 1 unconstitutional. One is Article 3, Section 15, which says that Commonwealth will not or shall not fund sectarian schools. Article 3, Section 29 has commentary about no appropriations going to educational sectarian institutions. And then Article 3, Section 30 also says that the Commonwealth shall not fund any school that is not under the absolute control of the Commonwealth. So right there, you have three different avenues for a bill to, you know, to show this bill is unconstitutional.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard there was an interesting comment from Senator Williams.
Yes. Senator Leach brought up the fact, you know, he brought up some of these constitutional problems, and Senator Williams said, we have three branches of government. We can let the judicial branch decide if it's constitutional. Now, mind you, state legislators take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. So in the process of their duties in passing legislation, they should be considering constitutional problems and not just passing it off on the judiciary. But that's exactly what Senator Williams suggested.
Yeah, as I heard the story, he was saying that, well, you know, that whole what you're talking about is just a concept.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's just disturbing to us. I mean, you know, we want them to be considering the constitutional problems. I mean, this, the bill could simultaneously cure AIDS and cancer, but if it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional.
So let me ask you this. It gets out of the Education Committee. 8-2 is the vote. The Democrats seem to be in favor. Only two Democrats voted against it. Where does it go from here? Where do we stop this thing?
Well, it's good. I think really the battleground is probably going to be in the House. The opposition and the support is really interesting. It's not completely breaking down on party lines. I know the Senate vote was, you know, all the Republicans voted yes and two Democrats voted yes, which is two Democrats voting no. But from what we've been hearing, we are hearing mixed messages. You know, some Democrats are supportive and some are opposed. Some Republicans recognize that if you take this state money away from the public schools, the school districts then are going to be in a position of needing to increase property taxes because they're not going to lose so many students that they, you know, will be able to cut costs, but there's still going to be there's going to be a loss of funding. So, you know, there are Republicans who are recognizing that. I think that it seems like the Senate leadership is gung-ho, the Senate Republican leadership, and I think the real battle is going to be in the House.
Yeah, because I look at this, and you know, if we're being told we've got this massive budget deficit, we've got this huge hole that has to be filled. Why is this the right time to be doing something that, in my opinion, is only going to benefit a handful of people who are already sending their kids to private school? And I know that's 3 years down the road, but that's what it's going to do. I think they've already admitted it's only going to help something like 5% of the kids who are in the failing schools now. I would say if you're going to spend all this money, there's got to be a better way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we know that the public schools will lose money in the budget. It certainly appears that way from all everything we've been hearing about what the governor's going to say next week. So the public schools are going to already be taking a whack from the state budget. And then this voucher program just gives them a second shot, particularly in the third year when it really bounces up. The estimates from the Pennsylvania Association of rural and small schools is that by the third year, this will cost $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
And how many, you know, what are they saying that the targets are of help? I mean, how many kids are going to benefit from this? What's the target for them?
Well, that's kind of hard to gauge. I mean, the Rural and Small Schools Association, I believe they based that on Ohio, where there was a 15% participation. So, I mean, it could be higher than that, though, or it could be lower. It's really hard to get a handle on how many kids will take advantage. I mean, it's going to require kids whose parents are active and aware that this is available. And that's going to leave kids behind. You know, the kids whose parents aren't as aware or as active in their education are going to be left behind in the public schools now with less resources.
Yeah, but I would say that the kids whose parents are involved right now, those are the kids who are going to do all right anyway.
Well, that's true. There's no academic requirement here. So kids who are already doing okay in the public schools could end up getting the voucher and then go to the private school and continue to succeed as they would have in the public school anyway. We're also concerned about one of the other issues for the second issue for the ACLU is that this is taxpayer funding for schools that can and do discriminate. These private schools and parochial schools discriminate against kids on the basis of disability, limited English proficiency, sexual orientation. So when you're talking about school choice, the choice is really in the hands of the private schools who can decide who they will and will not take, whereas the public schools take everybody.
See, but here's the thing, Andy. I had Mike Furr on this program not too long ago, and he told me that that was the golden ticket. Once they had that voucher, the schools could not in any way deny them access. It was the golden ticket. They had to be accepted.
Well, maybe that's what Senator Fulmer wants, but the reality is that there's nothing in the bill that actually requires the private schools to take everybody.
And, you know, how could it? I mean, to be honest, if I got this voucher, because I'll tell you, if there was an opportunity, I could send my daughter, my three kids down to, you know, to Abington's Friends School or Shipley or one of those high-priced schools, you know, where I kick in a couple of grand and they get the very best education, I would take advantage of it.
Right.
The question is would they accept my kids?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question, and that's our concern. There's actually a New York Times article about a month ago or so talking about how these private schools will counsel kids out. So when kids are struggling, they'll actually find ways to get the kids to leave in order to help their own, you know, overall test scores.
What I see this as, and maybe you'll agree or disagree, I see this as what we're doing to college. To what we're doing to higher education with all this for-profit stuff. It's all about the money, and it's not really about what the kids are getting. Once they get that voucher, it doesn't matter whether the kid stays or goes.
Well, and there's also and I'm not as familiar with this, but I've certainly heard about it. There's certainly an attack in Pennsylvania and across the country on public school, in the public school system. This is coordinated by a number of wealthy advocates who have been donating to legislators here in Pennsylvania. And we know that public schools have to continuously fight off these attacks. And so I believe part of this is rooted in that very issue. We actually heard some senators talking about the fact that there are other reform issues where there's more consensus, but they brought up this divisive issue first. And I believe it's to get after the teachers' union.
Well, I'm absolutely right with you, Andy Hoover. What's the third thing that the ACLU's got a problem with?
It's those two. It's the constitutional issues and the discrimination.
See, I would have thought it would have been the third part would have been the fact that we don't want the separation of church and state thing.
Oh yeah, well, and that's what the state constitutional issues are really about: religious liberty. You know, the one provision, as I mentioned, it says the Commonwealth cannot fund sectarian schools, religious schools, or religious institutions. Unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court has actually upheld vouchers under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But of course, the state constitution—that's the floor. The state constitutions can put in more rights in their Declaration of Rights. So, the Pennsylvania Constitution actually has more restrictions to keep the government separated from religious institutions.
So, for the people out there listening, how can we? You know the process as well as anyone. What advice would you give to folks who want to see this stop in its tracks?
Well, certainly contacting your state senator. Although I think that the House is probably going to be even more important. So, talking with state representatives. If your listeners know people who are involved in education who can speak to this well through experience, that's helpful. And certainly parents who recognize that their schools could be losing funding, That's a huge, really important messenger as well. You know, a lot of these school districts around this area, Cumberland, Dauphin County, won't be affected because they don't have the failing schools. But they know, you know, we're concerned that the voucher program will continue to get ratcheted up once it gets passed and it becomes bigger and bigger. So I definitely think parents and educators all have reasons to oppose this.
Well, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but after the third year, I thought that's when it opened up to everybody else. It wasn't just the failed.
All low income students.
Okay.
Not necessarily those in the failing schools, but I've already heard people saying, well, you know, will they bump up the percentage over the poverty line? You know, those kinds of things. That would be one way to expand it.
It will be an interesting thing to see. Andy Hoover, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the education.
Sure. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Dan Snyder is stamping his tiny little feet and having a screaming tantrum. That's unpleasant to witness when a 3-year-old does it, but it's truly troubling to see a 45-year-old billionaire owner of a pro football team throw a public hissy fit. Snyder owns the once great but now terrible Washington Redskins, whose on-field ineptness during his 10-year tenure has made long-suffering fans almost insanely mad. However, the owner's tantrum is not directed at his players or coaches, but at a local news weekly called the Washington City Paper. It dared to publish a long piece deriding Snyder himself as the source of the team's misery. "What insouciance!" shrieked the Dan as he summoned his legal team to go after the small paper. Their first tactic was raw intimidation. "Mr. Snyder has more than sufficient means to protect his reputation," the lawyer snarled at City Paper's owners, crudely implying that if they didn't give in to Mr. Redskin, he would bury them in legal costs. But City Paper didn't fall for such smack talk, so Dan pushed ahead, suing for $2 million in general damages. But his libel suit turns out to be compromised by the fact that the article in question is, well, factual. This reality led the billionaire to try a trick play, claiming that the article was an offensive, anti-Semitic diatribe against him, an assertion that an independent journalistic observer calls almost unbearably stupid. After all, Snyder's team is called Redskins, a slur that Snyder insists, quote, is not meant to be offensive whatsoever. This is Jim Hightower saying, overprivileged corporate crybabies like Dan Snyder are giving hypocrisy a bad name. They denounce lawsuit abuse by anyone who dares to sue them, even as they deploy their legal departments to intimidate anyone who crosses them.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com. Oh,
yeah. Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. In case you had any delusions that the Republican Party actually cared about the budget, actually cared about working people, actually cared about you, House Republicans today voted in lockstep to protect corporate welfare for the big oil queen. Understand they want massive, massive, deep, draconian, painful cuts for you and me. You and I, we need to tighten our belt because we're the problem. We need to suck it up and do without. But their oil buddies and their Wall Street criminals, pass the plate. The billionaires are in need.
Oh yeah, baby. Oh yeah, baby.
In order to avoid a government shutdown, the House of Representatives today moved forward on approving a stopgap measure. They wanted to fund the government for another 2 weeks. Democrats then offered this motion to recommit that would have stripped the five largest oil companies of their corporate welfare. This action would have saved tens of billions of dollars of our money. Remember the pledge? Do you remember the pledge? Remember the grand pledge that we were going to cut $100 billion? We were going after them all! We're going to go after them all, except for the oil companies. Republicans and a dozen bent-knee corporate Democrats voted the measure down 176 to 249. So the welfare payments to the big oil companies, right there, all very happy. You'll remember a similar vote about 2 weeks ago to recoup the $53 billion in taxpayer funds from the big oil companies. That was voted down as well. Again, along party lines. Understand who the shills for big oil are. The Republicans and a handful of bent-knee Democrats. And now you look at the former CEO of Shell. His name is John Hofmeister. He said recently that big oil doesn't need the subsidies. And in face of the sustained high oil prices, they don't need it, man. They're making big bucks. And if you look at the numbers from 2005 to 2009, that period right there, the big oil companies made a combined $500 billion in profit. Not revenue, in profit. That's money in their pocket, money in the shareholders' pockets. And you think about all that money going back to the OPEC nations. This massive transfer of wealth. And get ready for more. Because they're prepping us. They're already prepping us. They're priming the pump a little bit. They're saying, okay, guys, you know what? There's all this unrest in the Middle East, and those people over there are causing trouble. And gas prices by Memorial Day, it was in the Patriot today, gas prices could top $4 a gallon. And in fact, by summer, could be $5 a gallon because prices are going through the roof. Now, understand, when gas prices go through the roof, who's hit hardest? You and I are hit hardest by this. We're the ones who are stuck with all of this. It's just amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Pork Chop on the line. How are you, Brother Pork Chop?
How are we doing, Rick?
I'm good. Yourself, sir? How you feeling?
I'm getting better. Pneumonia can be a little stubborn when it comes to, you know, getting to beat it.
for those who don't know Pork Chop was in Madison, Wisconsin with our friend Mark Rowan, helping to bring everyone the video from inside the Capitol. And unfortunately, Pork Chop took ill and had to take a couple of days off. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better though, buddy.
Yeah, I am. Has everybody been listening? What's going on with the show? We've been off the air for 2 days now due to the Capitol has pushed everyone out and pushed us out, and they're refusing to give us any kind of press credentials to get back into the building. And we're working on it. We want everyone to know that we're trying our best. We're using every avenue possible, trying to get back into that building so that we can get the truth about what is going on. The Republican Party and the governor are pulling out some really nasty stuff.
You bet they are.
Yeah, they're doing some really nasty things. There was a report today that Mark told me that you might have already heard about, that one of the Democratic Party actually started letting protesters in through a window, and at that point they decided that it was going to be justified to nail down all the windows in the Capitol, which for one is against fire code, but despite for that, the morality of it is just, you know, that's completely wrong.
And what I said yesterday, and we talked with Mark a little bit here on the program yesterday, what I said yesterday is he's literally destroying the House of the People. He is literally damaging the House.
Absolutely. Absolutely in every way. Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more 100%.
So what are you guys working on right now? I know we were trying to get Mark some press credentials. We're still working on that. Where are you guys right now with all that?
From the report that Mark gave me early a little bit ago, we're we're getting closer. They talked to the person down at the Capitol today that actually hands out the press passes. And because we are union affiliated, because I'm a union electrician and so is Mark and Michelle and the other brothers and sisters that are helping us, that it would pretty much be a cold day in hell before they ever gave us press credentials.
That's
but
for sure.
I'm not going to look at it as negatively like that, you know.
Yeah. See, here's the thing, Porkchop. Here's the thing, buddy.
Yeah.
I can hear it in your voice. You're one of those. You're one of those union thugs. You're one of those people.
Yeah.
We can't have you around.
I couldn't hurt a fly. That whole persona is so ridiculous. That persona drives me absolutely crazy when I hear that. If any of the viewers out there, if they watch the live stream, you want to see what union thugs look like, you go to Ask the People and you watch the live video footage. Those are the union thugs that everyone is talking about.
Yep.
Preaching solidarity in a peaceful manner. There's no sticks, there's no clubs, there's none of that crap.
I gotta
tell
you, Porkchop, I went down there hoping for it. I was looking for it and all I came across was an old lady with a muffin. Kept trying to feed me. I mean, I haven't eaten so well. The building and construction guys were handing out bratwurst. The old ladies were handing out cookies. There was a guy handing out sweet potatoes. The pizza place was giving free pizza. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I've never ate so well in my life.
That's how brotherly love works. That's how the brotherhoods work. When you are part of the bigger picture, there is so much love that goes along with being, I have the pleasure of being in a union that I have a home to stay in every state in this country. And all I have to do is make a phone call. And that's the kind of message that we send. There is no, stuff that happened in the 60s and the 50s. That's all gone away. It's been transformed over the past 50 years. And what you're seeing now, or what they don't want you to see, is what the truth is.
Yep.
Is that there is a peaceful protest there. These people are upset at their governor. They're upset about this bill. More states are having the exact same thing. I've been watching reports that Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Minnesota is supposed to be on that list, and I know personally that there's 14 other bills in 14 different states that are going to be doing this exact same thing of taking collective bargaining rights away from their people, and it is not okay. That is just the plain and simple facts. We are not okay with it, and we're not going to stand for this anymore.
And
big business is not going to depict this.
And I give you all the credit in the world, and I hope you guys get back on the air real soon. Because as soon as you do, we're gonna make sure that your stream and your links are on our site so that our listeners and the people in this area can see the great work you're doing. Again, Porkchop, we're trying to figure out a way because we've got to see what's going on in there.
Well, that's exactly it. Nobody's seeing what's going on right now. I've not seen a single picture inside the building since I left. The day I left, the stream got shut down.
And you know who I blame for that? Our corporate-controlled for-profit media structure that's too afraid of the power structure and the profit structure to actually do their jobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And you know what? Then if they're not willing to restructure it, well, then the people are going to have to restructure it for them because if they're not going to step up to the plate, then somebody else is going to step up to the plate. And make no mistake, and everybody listening can hear, you can quote me on this one. It is not about money. I went to Wisconsin on my unemployment check, and I plan on going back to Wisconsin on an unemployment check. It is not about money. The whole mainstream media surrounding this whole thing around the budget is not the problem. I talked to a brother who would actually benefit from it, but he doesn't care. It's not about that. It's about our rights.
Absolutely.
And that's the bottom line.
I'm right there with you, Porkchop. I appreciate the call, buddy. I got to take a break right here. Again, as soon as something's up, I want to know.
We'll be all over it, my friend.
Thanks
we
so
will.
Much.
We'll be all over it.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with Tom Jurevich. Stick around.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com. We're calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
I work for the state now, helping kids with disabilities. I love the work, hate the rules, the bosses knew would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now that I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. When did I become a problem? How did
now that's a question. It's a question I've got for everyone. You know, when did the public workers, when did workers become the problem? You know, when I see the USA Today last week with the headline, and I know I've been harping on it, but it is one of those things that just grabs me and says, this is the problem. When the headlines of USA Today says, for the wealthy, luxury is back. And it talks about several hundred thousand dollars for a luxury car and $20,000-$50,000 for a watch. You know, I gotta say, you know, I don't know that the workers are the problem here. Problem is maybe we got some people at the top not contributing. Anyway, that was a great song. When did I become the problem by Tom Jurevich? And I've got Tom on the phone. Tom, welcome to the program.
Great to be back, Rick.
Tom Jurevich is also the author of a great book. I suggest everyone pick it up. It's called At the Altar of the Bottom Line. And I think, you know, you go through that book, Tom, and talk about the workers who have struggled, who have fought their way to, you know, just to an existence. And again, you know, they seem to be the problem again, you know, or so we're told.
You know, it is incredible the way the blame patterns work, you know, that we never blame up, we always seem to blame down. And, you know, we seem to have forgotten about, remember those bankers?
Yeah.
You know, they seem to have disappeared, haven't they? And what about the politicians, even our fellow there in Wisconsin who gave away most of what was the surplus to the corporate tax giveaways, and then it turns around, and then it's the teachers, you know, the public servants, the policemen, the firefighters, those are the folks that are the problem. Rick, I just don't get it.
Well, here's the thing, and I think you bring up the blame pattern. Any blame pattern is based on who controls who gets blamed.
You betcha.
And if you listen to the mainstream corporate-controlled media, it's those people. It's those people who live next door to you. It's those people who teach your children and pick up your trash, put out your fires, and protect you. Those are the problem.
You know, and that's right. Ever since the beginning of time, those in power have always tried to divide working people one from another, right? They bring in, you know, people of color, and they blame African-American workers. They blame Mexican workers. They're always going to blame somebody, and they're working really hard to divide things up right now. And you know what's amazing? Is when you actually look at the facts, I don't know if you saw that New York Times poll today, it says that actually when you ask Americans what they believe about collective bargaining, 2-1, they think that we should keep the collective bargaining rights for public sector employers.
Yep.
Employees.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing that's kind of scary to me, though. If you read the article a little bit further, and I talked about this in the opening of the program,
mm-hmm.
you read a little bit further, you realize that unions don't have such a great name. A third of the people were supportive, a quarter were not supportive, and the rest didn't know or didn't know anything about unions. I see this, what's going on right now for the labor movement, and I hope they're working on this as an opportunity for them to start telling their tale, telling the stories of the past, because I look at what's going on in Wisconsin, and you're a labor historian, you'll be able to talk about this a little bit better than I can, but when Scott Walker said he was going to call out the National Guard, I thought of what happened up here about 40 miles up the road on Interstate 81 at Latimer, where 19 people were shot in the back and killed in cold blood. That's what I thought of.
That's exactly right. No, and when you hear these stories, you know, the National Guard brought out on our own people, again, these are the kind of countries that right now are rising up against their leaders, you know? This doesn't happen in the U.S. You know, unions are part of our democratic system of checks and balances. I mean, we wouldn't have a middle class. We wouldn't have, I mean, all the things that list them, public education, Social Security, if we didn't have a trade union movement. But I think the most important thing for us to remember right now is that, you know, none of this happened easy. It always happened with a struggle.
Right.
And in some ways, I think, you know, this struggle is helping to remind everybody, I mean, those on the front lines in Madison, those whose jobs are being threatened. But I think the rest of us, and that group in the middle, you're right, I'm terrified more about the people who are undecided than those who are opposed to us, because there's always people who oppose unions.
Right.
But so many people just don't know about unions.
Well, here's the thing, and this is where I've kind of taken a little solace, Tom. The reality is the corporatists, the very wealthy, the radical right, whatever you want to call them, the robber barons of our generation have spent billions of dollars on messaging, bashing labor, bashing workers' rights, bashing collective bargaining, and this is what they got for it.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. There's no truth. I mean, if you look at Wisconsin, I had a little piece yesterday in Business Week. And I looked at the numbers, and it's like, for all this, you know, Wisconsin workers are paid more than their counterparts in the private sector. Well, it's actually not true. You know, I mean, they're higher educated because many of them are teachers. And if you compare them to their counterparts in the private sector, they make about 14% less than their counterparts in the public sector.
Yep.
And what about those gold-plated pensions? You know what the average Wisconsin worker makes? On a pension,
no.
$23,000 a year.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the problem with that, Tom. The private sector has stolen all of the pensions from the working people that work in the private sector. So what you've got now is you've got a bunch of people who are looking at the teachers going, well, I don't have a pension,
mm-hmm.
so you shouldn't have it either.
Yeah. But again, you know, if you look at it that way, this is sort of what we've seen is the whole effect of neoliberalism and this, you know, dog-eat-dog. It's not about a tide that raises all boats, which is what, you know, the labor movement or the war on poverty was about, right?
It's about hooray for me and screw you.
It's about what I don't have and you have.
Yep.
If you got it, I don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. You know, I was listening to one of the right-wing talk show hosts.
Yeah.
He was sitting in for Limbaugh. And an African-American guy talking about South Africa and how the minimum wage held down the African-American worker who was willing to work for a dollar an hour, and how that would have been better for the African-Americans or for the Africans in South Africa so that they could rise up and that they would have jobs. And, you know, I listened to his argument, and it's really a very twisted, bizarre argument that having people work for less than poverty wages somehow makes them better off.
Well, have you seen the latest? The several states now are thinking about fixing their budget gaps by bringing in prison labor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unheard of to think of that we're going to go back to that system, and that these things are actually being floated as a realistic possibility.
But it just tells you how far to the extreme right we have gotten. We are dead smack. I mean, income inequality is right there during the Gilded Age. We are living in the era of the robber barons. It's no longer the Carnegies and the Mellons. It's the Kochs and the Scaifes. Those are our robber barons.
And you know, just a minute ago you mentioned, and I think you're absolutely right, is that just the power of this messaging, it's unrelenting. It's unrelenting now. It continues to be unrelenting. And you know, save a few folks like you and others out there, there's so little voice for workers on the airwaves in any shape, manner, or form. No wonder why people don't have, you know, I want to be careful here. I want to blame working people. Because I think that what that New York Times poll showed, I think, is that when push comes to shove, there's an awful lot more heart in workers and ordinary people than we want to sometimes give them credit for.
Well, no, I mean, here's where my hope is. Look, if you've been berated, if you've been beaten with this message, if it's been pounded into you for 30-some years now, that unions are bad, the individual's good, collective bargaining is bad, you don't want to be one of those union thugs. And that's the best they've gotten, a third firmly in favor, a quarter firmly against, and the other one's going, well, we just don't know.
That's right. And I think there's something else here that I think we got to be hopeful about. I mean, it's hopeful in a very twisted way. You know, this afternoon, the governor of Wisconsin announces the rest of his budget, right, which is almost $1 billion in cuts to education, state, and local aid, right? And I think the amazing thing is that this is going to have a devastating impact. I don't care what you believe, what side of the spectrum you're on, it's going to have a devastating impact on schools and public services. And I think the point there is that I think people are going to realize that. You can talk abstractly about tax cuts and high-paid workers, but when it's your kid who's got 40 kids in their class, you get pissed.
Oh, I do. In fact, I've got a front page. I've got a front page photo with me and my children protesting 30 kids in a class.
That's right.
Because I just thought it was too much. Like I said at the time, there wasn't enough room in that classroom for the kids to trip over each other. That's how tightly they were packed in.
And it's amazing, you know, Republicans with all this focus on the deficit, all of a sudden they've been very concerned about their kids and their grandkids. Well, hell, if they're really concerned about their kids and their grandkids, they would make sure that we had good teachers, lots of them, and enough money in the education system. I mean, that's what's going to build our future. We can cut the deficit all we want, but if we don't have any schools, we don't have any decent public services, what kind of future is that?
Well, what we've got is we've got visionless leaders who are only thinking of themselves for this moment, because you look at gas prices, for instance, they're talking $5 by summer. That's going to absolutely devastate the working class of this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They'll plunge us back. Gutner said that this morning. They'll plunge us back into the recession. And these are not minor issues out there. And if we're only focusing on cutting, it's just not going to get us to any kind
of prosperity. You know, we spent a week in Madison, and it was a great week because we got to see just the energy that was there. We were there just this past Saturday for the 100 to 150,000 people who had packed into the streets there at the Capitol. And the people kept chanting, "This is what democracy looks like."
Yeah.
And when you go into the Capitol, when everyone was in there, 1,000 people staying there overnight, they had areas where there was food. They had areas for childcare. They had an area for health care. I wish Governor Walker would see that and say, "Yeah, that's what democracy looks like."
Yeah. You're so right, Rick. I mean, I have to laugh. He keeps saying that. Well, these protesters are still a minority of public sector workers, and people in state don't agree with them. You know, if you think about what he's done here, he has created activists who for the rest of their lives are going to be fighting the good fight because of what happened here in Wisconsin. That's a tremendous service he did for the working people of this country.
Absolutely, because I tell this story often. I walked into my local high school. And I was, you know, there was a new superintendent. I wanted to go meet him. So I walked in and there were some students there. And I had my Teamsters jacket on. And a kid looked at me and goes, "Oh, hey, I see you work with horses." And I said, you know, being kind of, you know, snide, I go, "Yeah, I'm a jockey." But he had no idea what that Teamster M was. I think he will now.
I think he will now. And as I say, I'm very hopeful by that Times poll. And as I say, there's some complicated messages in that. But I think when you ask people specifically about collective bargaining and about their teachers and their views of, in fact, what they said, the majority of people said, how do we fix this budget crisis in the States? We raise taxes.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think that there's some hopefulness out there. And I think that what's happening in medicine, I think, is really helping to galvanize a lot of people who, for a long time, were sitting on the fence.
You're listening to The Rick Show. We're with Tom Jurevic. He's the author of the great book, At the Altar of the Bottom Line. I suggest it to everyone. You can probably pick that up at TomJurevic.com. There's a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, he wrote the song, When Did I Become the Problem? Tell me a little bit about that. When did you write it? Were you getting much airplay with it?
Well, I am. I wrote it for the last CD, which is also called Altar of the Bottom Line. The CD includes some songs based on interviews I wrote from the book that I wrote. But the problem was, you know, so many times, particularly in the public sector, you know, it's always the workers themselves that get blamed. And I had to tell that story, you know. I just felt like I had to get that out because, it's such a crazy idea that, again, we forget about the bankers, we forget about the politicians, we forget about the bosses. I mean, you know, whenever you hear these stories about high wages and high bonus benefits, those are generally the people who are managers. Those aren't the workers. So I really had to tell the story. And so it talks about a teacher, it talks about a state mental health worker, and then a national park guy who he's trying to, you know, his hours have been cut, the staff has been cut, and he's got a whole line of cars, and everyone's yelling at him because there's a whole line of cars. And, you know, this is what happens, is that we end up blaming the victim in the trick.
Yep. You know, when you mentioned the guy who does very well, I always think about Robert Nardelli. Does that name ring a bell with you?
Oh, sure.
$210 million he got for being fired from Home Depot.
Yeah.
How do I get a job like that?
Yeah, I'm with you.
TomJurevic.com is the website. Tom, great talking with you. I'd love to have you back again real soon.
Okay, Rick.
All right.
Keep up the good fight.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Cut all our hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become the problem? How did the fault become all mine? The president says the tithing is built, the only one that's tithing is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make people in your house.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If there's any portion of the program that you missed, you can download our podcast right from there or through Apple's iTunes, keyword The Rick Smith Show. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Our stat of the day from the Too Much Online blog says politicians the nation over are trying to pin the blame for America's troubles on public employees, but the only Americans making out like bandits, according to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, their economist John Schmidt, sit in the nation's richest 1%, and virtually no public employees are found in that richest 1%. In 2008, a family needed to make $386,000 to make it to that lofty top 1%. The President of the United States, he has a salary of $400,000 a year. He was in the top 1%. Now, our Vice President, who only makes $221,000, well, he was left out. So this idea that somehow these public workers, they're to blame. It's those people. They're the blame. They're the problem. And how do we come to that? How do we come to that moment where we're thinking, well, it's those people. They have pensions. They have health care. I don't. How do we come to that? Well, we come to that because there's a massive media campaign out there. There's a lot of money. And more money than we can probably imagine. That's why Politico, Ben Smith over at Politico wrote, this is the Ken Vogel and I reported recently, a serious struggle underway for control of the Republican outside money apparatus, pitting upstart ideological Koch brothers, backed groups against the devoted Republican, politically pragmatic crossroads group in which Karl Rove is the key. Now, what you've got is you've got Rove who's saying, well, we're gonna raise $120 million. Now, the Koch brothers, they plan to raise and spend, at the very least, $88 million. And Rove says, you know, they're gonna get $120 million. And there's all this money going out there. There's all this money being secretly put into these front groups. Americans for Prosperity, American Crossroads, Crossroads Grassroots Policy Strategies, all of these, you know, these wonderfully named groups who just sound so American, dripping with patriotism and mom and apple pie and, you know, because who doesn't love Americans for Puppies? And you got all these groups with all of this money, man. And they've all got the same basic message. It may vary a little bit on the edges, but the same basic message is it's you who's the problem. And I really haven't figured out, and I hope someone can explain this to me, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, this concept that there's a benevolent corporation out there that just wants to give us all these jobs, that wants to create all these jobs. Because as I remember economics, the best thing for a business to do is lay people off. If you could do more with less, that's what you did. If you were able to force your employees to do twice as much work, you could lay off half of your staff. Because you're still getting all the work out of them, but just saving more money. So, you know, when you see this division in the working class, when you see this mass division between union, non-union, blue-collar, white-black, you know, however they choose to slice and dice us, and we allow that to happen, it hurts us. You know, I went home last night, and again, you know, I do this at the end of the program. I go home, and I sit up till all hours of the night and don't get enough sleep. But they had the The local PBS station had the triangle shirtwaist story, where nearly 150, mostly women, were either burnt to death or fell 8 stories to their death or fell down an elevator shaft to their death because their employer locked them in. When the fire started, there was nowhere to go. But the story was an interesting one in that when finally all of the waist shirt workers went on strike, it was the triangle people who were forced not to have a closed shop union, which means that they couldn't negotiate for conditions. The vast majority of the other waist shirt manufacturers had a closed shop, so the workers had the ability to bargain for their conditions, which one of them would have been, you don't lock the door. You have adequate fire protection. You have adequate escape routes. You know, these would have all been things that were brought up. And I look at the fight that these women, mostly girls, went through, and the story that they told of these brave women going on strike. And the bosses hiring prostitutes and hiring thugs to go into the picket line and beat them up. And the police arresting anyone who fought back, and the judges throwing these women and these girls in jail, and how overwhelmingly, the system was against them. It wasn't until J.P. Morgan's daughter stepped forward and said, you know what, because she was part of the suffragette movement, and she saw these women as potential allies. It wasn't until she stepped forward and you saw these high society women now taking on the cause and marching with these lowly loom workers, these lowly seamstresses, that they stopped being beaten. Because you know what? You don't club, one of the aristocrats. You don't club a high society woman. And that's when things turned around. It wasn't until the benevolent upper class, stepped forward and said, no, I think I'm going to side with them. And in the end, she didn't side with them all the way. Eventually, she backed off because the workers wanted a closed shop. And she said, well, we don't want socialism, and left them off on their own. But it was not until the high society people spoke up. And what does that say about us? Because for the most part, the rest of society was benevolent. They could care less. So what's that say about us right now? Where do we go from here? Are we going to see people coming together? Because I'm telling you right now, you're not going to see the upper crust coming to our defense. They have got us on the ropes, and they know it. They've got us there. They have broken the private sector. They've got workers expecting to lose wages. They've got workers expecting to not have health care and expecting not to have pensions. And now they're turning that anger to the people who do. Going back to the Jay Gould quote, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. State Capitol Police in Madison, Wisconsin have tightened security, and protester presence was considerably smaller inside the building on Monday in advance of Governor Scott Walker's budget address on Tuesday. Only people with appointments to see their legislators were allowed in Monday, but protest signs remained up throughout the rotunda area. Wisconsin's 14 Democratic state senators are steadfast in blocking the bill gutting collective bargaining for public workers, despite threats from Governor Walker to lay off thousands of people. As Republican attacks on public workers, their collective bargaining rights, wages, and benefits continue around the nation, working families inspired by Wisconsin's movement are rallying to defend themselves. When correspondent Dave Goodman reports on a Boston rally held Saturday in solidarity with Wisconsin.
With music provided by a local activist marching band, labor leaders and social justice activists called upon demonstrators to remember, as the head of the Massachusetts Teachers Association put it, an attack on collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin is an attack on workers everywhere. Reverend Fred Small, minister of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church in Cambridge, said issues of political and economic importance to workers are also moral issues, and asked,
"Is our democracy for sale to the highest bidder? Will we be ruled by those who, in Oscar Wilde's words, know the price of everything and the value of nothing?"
Groups such as Mass Jobs with Justice pledged to continue their loud support for living wage jobs, union representation, and affordable health care for all workers.
Indiana working families are entering their ninth day of protests at the state capitol there. Indiana AFL-CIO spokesman Jeff Harris says Democrats in the Indiana legislature are still boycotting sessions, hoping to kill some anti-worker bills for this year.
There are several other bills that are still on the table, including a bill that would criminalize striking for public employees, all public employees, and if you do strike, you would forfeit your pension. There are bills that would make it illegal for public entities to collect union dues for their employees. We are inspired by what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin, and don't think it would be possible to have made this happen in Indiana without what has happened in Wisconsin. It's an empowering movement, and it's showing the world that average people, working people, can form together, stand up, and have their voices heard. And we are committed to staying here until the last bill dies. We are not going away. We've defeated three bills already just by our sheer numbers and our sheer presence, and we're going to stay here as long as we need to, and we know the people of Wisconsin will. As well.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I thought the whole union gun thing that Billy Bragg talks about is metaphorical. I thought it was, you know, we have this power in our numbers. But according to John Boehner, there's actually a machine gun that has the union label right there on it. And evidently we're pointing it at the heads of politicians, according to the Speaker of the House. Kind of strange stuff. But for our report of what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin, we've got Frank Emspeck. He's the chief cook and bottle washer over there at the Workers Independent News. Does the really great wind clips at the top of the hour. Frank, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Where are we broadcasting exactly?
We are in our studio here in central Pennsylvania. We are back home where we belong.
Well, you're home where you belong. Okay, there you go. Because I know you left the basement. I wonder where you've gone. Okay, cool.
And I want to hear from you. Before we move on, I want to thank you for all of the help. And I want to thank Dwayne Hendricks, the guy who gave us access to a great office. The people of Madison were fantastic to us, and we greatly appreciated all of your help. And we owe you, and our listeners owe you guys immensely.
Well, listen, the next time they get 100,000 people over where you are, we'll come visit. How's that?
And we will be as hospitable as you were to us. Thank you, Frank. But what's going on there tonight?
Well, tonight, the governor, that is around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the governor gave his new budget message for 2011 and 2013 and also made it clear that he was intransigent on the old one, threatened to lay off thousands of people, proposed cuts in education and pensions and all kinds of state programs that would have a really long-term negative effect on the state. So while this was going on, there were several thousand people, probably about 5 or 10,000 outside the State House protesting. People were still inside the State House. The citizens were still inside our house, or the People's House, as we call it. And earlier today, a federal judge issued an injunction, basically a restraining order, preventing the governor from closing the State House to people. And, of course, that was in opposition to his decision to throw people out earlier in the week, and that was something the police declined to do. In the meantime, the governor then began bolting the windows shut in the state capitol so that nobody could get food in. But after some more discussions with the police have allowed food in, and to the best of my knowledge, there are still people in the capitol tonight, if not more than last night. But meanwhile, his political base, I mean, you know, I think is in trouble because the attacks are so generalized and so affect so many people that there is practically no group that's unaffected, and people are looking forward to major disruptions of their lives. And I don't think it's going to work. There's no polling whatsoever that suggests that he's gaining. In fact, all the polls show that if people could vote today, he wouldn't be in office.
You know, I look at what's going on out there, and I got to be honest. I think he's really lost his mind, he's just so ideologically driven that he doesn't care. Like the guy in Ohio who said, you know, it's nice to see all these people here, but we're going to do what we're going to do. We're resolved. We're going to do it.
Well, I think there's that possibility. Obviously, there are four or five Republicans who may be so embarrassed by this or may wish to stay in office in the future that they will break from him on one part of this budget bill or another. But so far, the only person that's been rumored to do so is still pretty cagey about it, and it may be because he doesn't have other sources of support. I think what's going to happen in the next few days is that the unions and others will assess the situation and decide whether or not to really back serious efforts to recall some of the senators. There is an organization in place now, WisconsinRecall.net, and so the infrastructure is in place to begin that effort. We will see whether everybody is going to get behind it or not. I think, again, the unions and other people involved in the political process are trying to take a look and say, all right, what's the chances of making an arrangement here with these Republicans? And if the answer is definitively no, then I suspect people will move towards the recall. Now, we cannot recall the governor for a year, so the recall would be aimed at certain senators. And
no,
I think that's one political direction. But the other is there is now several suits, court actions. One by AFSCME saying that the governor is basically violating the law by not working with the current legislation, that is, by not negotiating. Then there's a suit by the city of Milwaukee saying that future legislation that limits what localities can do about pensions is in violation of the state constitution, which apparently is the case because the state says that pensions are local option issues. Then there's another bunch of lawsuits around the whole issue of access to the Capitol, which at the moment the governor has been stymied, but he says he's going to do what he wants to do anyway. And then there are other suits that are being considered by all kinds of people about the procedures that the state government is using. And then finally, there is an investigation going on in regards to some of his ideas about privatizing or selling off state assets in a no-bid arrangement with no apparent oversight. And then in addition to that, the same type of stuff is going on in regards to the health care, where the state legislative bodies set the health care policies. But what the governor has proposed is that three people appointed by him will determine issues like what stuff gets covered under Badger Care, which is our local Medicare, and other things. So there's all kinds of growing political and legal challenges to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Is there any way to impeach him? I mean, you know, when I heard the phone call with the phony phone call that he believed was real, when he said that, you know, we had thought about, you know, sending in troublemakers, we had thought about the agent provocateurs, and we just decided on a different tactic.
Well, you have to have the legislature vote to impeach, and given that they voted to support him, and it's not closely divided in the assembly at all, or even in the Senate for that matter, it would be pretty hard to envision how you could get an impeachment resolution through, given the large Republican majorities.
Well, because at some point, I think the party has to cut him loose, because some of the people that I've talked to in Washington, they think the party's trying to pull him back, trying to soften this a little bit, say, hey, you won, you got major concessions, take that and be happy.
Well, they might. I mean, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that so far, there aren't the prerequisite number of Republican senators, state senators, willing to walk away from this.
Right.
And so right now there's a stalemate. Nobody quite knows what's going to happen. The Democratic leadership is still in the state of Illinois or in an undisclosed location, as they say. We've had interviews with them, and they are also not willing to say what they're going to do. And so that's where we stand.
So let me ask you
thousands
this.
Thousands of people are still here.
And that's
I don't
a good
think
thing.
People are just going to walk away. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's
demonstrations planned for later in the week. And in this state, you know, it's the wintertime still here, as you probably remember.
Yep.
And after what? It was 12 degrees on Saturday and with 100,000 people. So it was probably 5, but all those people were out there. Anyway, there were 25 community meetings around the state in the last 2 days. And so we're talking about places out in the state, out far away from Madison, in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, which is 40 miles to the southwest, 50 miles, very conservative area of the state. They had a picture of the school gymnasium there. It's a nice new high school. You couldn't get in. I mean, there were hundreds of people who came out to talk about these things, and most of them in opposition. And this was true all over the state.
Well, one of the things...
So, the teachers' union is organizing these, among others, and I think by the end of the week, by Friday, there'll probably be something like 70 meetings in different towns and cities, big and small, around the state of Wisconsin.
So let's talk about the Capitol for a second. How many people are still inside?
I don't know. When the last I heard from somebody who got in touch with us was several hundred, whatever that means. But it was not like thousands, and it was not emptied out, and people have made it very clear that they're never going to be a situation where everybody's gone.
And that's a good thing. Some of the people that we've talked to who are trying to get back in, one person in particular is trying to get, in to do what he was doing, which was putting everything on Ustream so that people around the country and around the world can see what's going in there. Evidently they've shut off all the internet. They've pushed him out. Any word on what's going on there?
We with Mike?
Yes.
Mark?
Mark Rowan.
Well, yes, I mean, we attempted to assist him this afternoon in getting press passes, and according to some witnesses, they were denied press passes on the basis that our media organization was funded by organized labor. So we, that is Diversified Media Enterprises, our official operating company, and our board of directors is considering what course of action we're going to take.
Interesting. I mean, and it's amazing what this guy's doing. I mean, it's just plain insane.
Right. So we think that this is a major violation of freedom of the press, and that, as I say, we were just informed of this at about 5 o'clock today, and we feel that even though that these are cooperating citizen journalists, and we are very, very concerned about this, because we feel that the idea here is that no matter, you know, who you are, you should be able to get access to the media events, to the people, and to be able to report the news accurately and fairly, and that by denying people, it's just the wrong thing to go, the wrong way to go. And again, we will take appropriate action. I'd like to say more, but we have a board meeting tomorrow in this regard, and have not not in a position to say much more at this point.
I would like to know when you decide what you're going to do and where this leads, because I think it is an important issue on the fact that, you know, we can't get in there. We don't know what's going on. That's frustrating to me.
And, well, it's worse than that. The Capitol Press Corps is selective, so they can let somebody in and not let somebody else in. And so I think that contributes to problems with news coverage, which are already problematical here because of the focus on the budget rather than the focus on some of the political aspects of the bill. And basically a reluctance to say that apparently one of the objectives of this bill, Ohio, Indiana, and others, is to bankrupt the union so that they cannot, in fact, be a political player in 2012.
So even if they don't
relationship between all these laws.
So even if they don't get the right to work laws that they want, even if they don't get the theft that they want of workers' rights, they're still stealing their money. They're still making them spend money that they, you got to give them credit.
There. Oh, listen, there's a 10-12% wage cut here for people in the middle of a recession, when the idea is to bring money into the economy and not take it away. There is a consolidation of power on the part of the governor. Is the father of the person who's the Speaker of the House and the Speaker of the Senate is going to be or has already been appointed to head up the state police. So, you know, you have the centralization of power. So there's a lot of other things going on here. And what it really amounts to is that the unions are the ones out there as the most organized force fighting for democracy here in the most fundamental way. You're talking about a law that says that working people cannot get together to deal with hours and working conditions. That's pretty fundamental. You can't talk about your conditions of work. So this is bad news, and really strikes at the heart of any democratic society.
I agree. Frank, I appreciate the update. We look forward to talking to you in the coming days as things develop there. I appreciate the work you're doing, and we look forward to talking again real soon.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Take it easy.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Dan Snyder is stamping his tiny little feet and having a screaming tantrum. That's unpleasant to witness when a 3-year-old does it, but it's truly troubling to see a 45-year-old billionaire owner of a pro football team throw a public hissy fit. Snyder owns the once great but now terrible Washington Redskins, whose on-field ineptness during his 10-year tenure has made long-suffering fans almost insanely mad. However, the owner's tantrum is not directed at his players or coaches, but at a local news weekly called the Washington City Paper. It dared to publish a long piece deriding Snyder himself as the source of the team's misery. "What insouciance!" shrieked the Dan as he summoned his legal team to go after the small paper. Their first tactic was raw intimidation. "Mr. Snyder has more than sufficient means to protect his reputation," the lawyer snarled at City Paper's owners, crudely implying that if they didn't give in to Mr. Redskin, he would bury them in legal costs. But City Paper didn't fall for such smack talk, so Dan pushed ahead, suing for $2 million in general damages. But his libel suit turns out to be compromised by the fact that the article in question is, well, factual. This reality led the billionaire to try a trick play, claiming that the article was an offensive, anti-Semitic diatribe against him, an assertion that an independent journalistic observer calls almost unbearably stupid. After all, Snyder's team is called Redskins, a slur that Snyder insists, quote, "is not meant to be offensive whatsoever." This is Jim Hightower saying, overprivileged corporate crybabies like Dan Snyder are giving hypocrisy a bad name. They denounce lawsuit abuse by anyone who dares to sue them, even as they deploy their legal departments to intimidate anyone who crosses them.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, we archive everything there for your entertainment and your enjoyment. I'm guessing a victory here, a pretty big victory. PayPal has backed down from fighting Bradley Manning, so evidently you will be able to go and donate money to Bradley Manning's defense through PayPal, which I suggest people do. I give the kid credit. Also, the WikiLeaks people, evidently they're going to be among the number of 241 possible Nobel Prize winners, Peace Prize winners. Interesting stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Kay on line two. How are we doing tonight, Kay?
Oh, my God, Rick, I found you.
I didn't know I was lost.
Well, see, I got, you know, life happened, you know.
I hear you.
Had a few surgeries. Things have been kind of rough. And I found you again.
How are you doing? It's been a while since I've talked to you. How are you doing?
Yes, it has. I'll tell you, while you were in Wisconsin, I was in Harrisburg. And the ACLU... I never say that right. AFL-CIO guy was there.
Yep, Rick Bloomingdale.
And, of course, you know, and then SEIU, the purple people.
Yep.
Anyway, and it was really, really great, and I wanted to just tell you about it. It was so exciting. First off, my husband retired from the military, so this was his first rally. So he was a newbie. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, and it was really good, and it made me feel good because when I just sit home and I watch the news and I see the insanity, it gets me depressed. It really does. But what Wisconsin has done, I think they have awoken the sleeping beast.
I'm hoping.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Oh, God. Our friend, Keith, usually says I'm about to give up on humanity. But she's hopeful, Rick, so I'm hopeful, too. But I'll tell you, you know, I just was listening to, what is it, Lawrence O'Donnell's show?
Yes.
Where that Wisconsin moron said that they don't want these people in the Capitol because they're slobs.
Yeah, and that's one of the first ones to be recalled, hopefully.
Oh, you know, that's what I'm hoping, too. And I thought, oh, God, please don't let that crap come here to Pennsylvania, you know. But Ed Schultz did a really good thing about, I hope competition isn't a problem, but he did a really good thing on his show tonight explaining compensation packages. Because the very few anti-union protesters that were there, I swear there was maybe 15 of them to our 300, they kept screaming, I'm not paying for your, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's gotten so twisted with misinformation. And Ed Schultz did a really good job, you know, really breaking it down and saying, okay, you get hired, you negotiate with an employer, you either do it collectively or individually, but that's your pay, and you pay into this, and blah, 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 you know.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy, and it is a class war. And I think that's what's going to wake people up, Rick. I'm hopeful. I'm really, really hopeful.
I'm hopeful as well. And when I saw some of the numbers coming out, when I see the fact that in the one poll, a third of the people are in favor of unions, a quarter are against unions, and there's that big middle mm-hmm. that is ripe for the taking. Mm-hmm. And all these years of anti-union assaults mm-hmm. By mm-hmm. the wealth class haven't swayed those folks away mm-hmm. from labor. So there's an opportunity.
Well, you know, here's what I know. Look, I'm going to admit it. I'm 54, actually. I'm 54 years old. So when I grew up, unions were everywhere. Unions were commonplace. Because of unions, you had 2 weeks vacation. You owned your home. You sent your kids to school. You had vacation. You had all that. You were tied with a pension. It was common. It was the way it was supposed to be. You know, and then a few years ago when we had that Harley-Davidson strike,
yep.
I was sitting in like a bar, and this bartender was sitting in the bar. It was like a bar restaurant. But this lady was, you know, griping about those workers and how greedy they are about health care. And I said, it's so sad because there's too many people today that don't understand that that was a right. I mean, it was a right, you know. And my husband has worked 4 months in the last 2 years. And this is a retired veteran, so his unemployment has gone from $4.90 to $64 a week. You know, now, fortunately, you know, we have military pay and everything, but I think the thing that makes me craziest is what is all this big upset about taxes? When I pay my bills, I look to the income I have.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, taxes are the government's income. And as my friend said, if you don't want to pay taxes, then stop driving on our roads. Don't call our police station. Don't call our fire department. You know, there's so many things that are paid by taxes that people just don't get it.
Yeah, well, it's the price of admission to society, Kay. You know, yeah. It's great hearing from you again. I hope you'll be a regular listener and a regular caller.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
I'm more of a night person. This really works for me, Rick.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Kay. I got to move along. Let's go to line one. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Good, Rick. How you guys doing? I picked you up just outside of Shippensburg, my way back from Johnstown. So been listening the last couple hours here and just enjoying it. Thought I'd call in and add to the conversation.
I appreciate it. You know, what are your thoughts on all this? You know, we keep hearing this, well, it's those workers. It's those people who have pensions. It's that health care that's bringing down our government. Curious your thought.
Well, listen, I think, you know, we talked a lot in the last couple months about the 99ers, right? All these people who are going to be impacted by the lack of jobs and the economy and the lack of extensions for unemployment. And I think, you know, sometimes you get to that tipping point where everything just kind of comes together at once. And I think we're all about to become 99ers, but it's not about 99 weeks of unemployment. It's going to be that it's 99% of the population finally gets it. And we're going to finally, you know, take a look at the 1% who've been taken, and given not a whole lot back. And I think we're going to be more unified. And I think the $6 gallon gasoline might be that tipping point this May and June that finally convinces people that, you know, 30 years of no growing of their income in the middle class is finally going to come home to roost. So.
Well, and 30 years of visionless leaders. You know, I've been saying this for years. This day is coming. We need to plan for it. We need to have public transportation. We need to have ways of getting people to and from home and work. We have not done it. I look here in Cumberland County where I live, here in this area in central Pennsylvania, I have to have a car. There's no choice. My leaders, my politicians have done a disservice to me, by not pursuing some sort of public transportation.
Yeah, I mean, when you have, no vision for what our economy is going to be about, no identity locally, and you have absolutely no plan for the next 25 years as the economy evolves. When crises hit like this, when they're about to hit, they're going to just burn the working class and middle class down the middle in terms of their family budgets. And that's what happens. Poor planning results in an absolute crisis. I mean, people should not underestimate the impacts that this kind of wage crisis and 41,000 people being dumped from adult basic this month. And I mean, all of this is coming, I think, together. And I was in State College this afternoon talking to students about, you know, why they should care about what's going on. And then I was down at a Johnstown Labor Council meeting where there were 35 people there. That's the most I'd ever seen in my 4 years at the AFL. So it was incredible to see people are kind of coming together. And the students were asking me some questions about, like, and what does this mean to them? And I said, hey, listen, you guys, you're not in a recession. You're in a depression.
You're in a depression, right.
The unemployment rate for all of you is above 25%.
Yep.
And,
you know,
there's no jobs waiting for them.
Right.
You know?
Did you see the New York Times piece today?
Yes.
The part I've been talking about is that part in the middle. There's a third who are in favor of labor unions, a quarter that are against it. Those are your fives. Leave them alone. But it's that big middle. The folks who either don't know or know nothing about unions, where I see an opportunity to reach out to those folks, especially the kids, the people that you're talking to, the young people who have never been exposed to it.
Yeah, and listen, I was at a Randall Ray economics lecture last week, and he was talking about, you know, how much of what we're in mirrors 1929 through 1935. And I tell people all the time that was the transformative moment for workers in America, because they realized that through collective action they were going to be able to fight back against the wealthy who had destroyed the country. Well, guess what? The time is here again. Those 25%, I mean, the answer is not simply just to defend collective bargaining rights for the 9% of total workers who are in unions, but to defend collective bargaining rights so we can get back to a 30, 35%, even 40% union density if we get out and do organizing. We not just protect the rights, let's use the rights, or they'll be taken away.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, last thing before I got to go.
Yeah.
You know, we were in Wisconsin last week talking about public transportation. We had listeners in Milwaukee who were listening on the internet and said, we'd love to come to Madison to see you, but during the last 50 years, they destroyed the public transportation line from Milwaukee to Madison. If it were the 1950s, we could get there because there was a train there. But today, since they've got a governor who's anti-public transportation, turned down all that money from the federal government to build that spur, we can't come to Madison from Milwaukee. And again, you know, another visionless leader.
Yeah, listen, this is our time. Everyone who's listening out there and is inspired to take action, not just to step up and rally and not just to step up and march, but now once we win these fights, step up and be leaders to help actually lead at the local level, at the state level, and explore some really visionary leadership so that we can transform this country into a place where schools are fantastic, there are ways to get from here to there, and that there are really incredible jobs that actually can support families and grow wages for the working class and middle class. That's the future I think we all want, but it isn't just going to be handed to us by benevolent corporations, as you said, Rick. It's something that workers have to fight for, families have to fight for to make happen.
It's about the solidarity we're seeing in the streets of Madison right now. It's about the solidarity we're seeing in Columbus, Ohio. And as a friend of mine always says, solidarity is not just a word, it's an action, and we're seeing the action, Mike.
Yes, and it's inspiring. Let's, you know, just keep it going.
Absolutely. I appreciate the call, brother.
Thanks, Rick. Take care of yourself.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Executive Director of CAIU on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
A sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
For common sense, reason, and community, come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And while you're there, we've got a link. One of our listeners sent me an email, said I thought I might share this link with you. Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois has a petition to show support for the Wisconsin 14. He's calling for people of the nation to sign the petition. As of March 1st, some 37,000 have signed it. When I looked, it was, what, about 43,000, I believe, Brett? Right about 43,000. So I suggest everyone go over to thericksmithshow.com, click on the link to take you to Dick Durbin's petition. Because, it, really, I mean, if it's not for these 14, in my opinion, the Fab 14, the Hero 14, whatever you want to call them, this thing gets rammed through. They're steamrolled, and we never have what's going on right now. Bob sent me an email during the break. A judge ordered the doors opened at the Capitol building today for the second time. They allowed one person per hour in the building after one person would leave. I'm currently waiting for Mark to call and give me an update today in Madison as to the struggle of the broadcast. So look, you know, they're trying to get back into the building. You look at what's going on there. Kind of scary. It's kind of scary that this guy has basically taken on the role of a king. Interesting stuff. I remember back a few weeks ago when we talked about the international hit squad, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or the GOP hit squad, that they had been, supposedly accused of spying on those they considered enemies, like the SEIU guy's wife and child wanted to know where they went to pray and those kind of things. The workers and those unions. Well, House Democrats, they're mounting a very public call for an investigation because, look, the Republicans aren't going to investigate this. They know what side their bread's buttered on. They're not going to go near their hit squad. But in a letter provided to the Washington Post, a group of Democratic lawmakers expressed concern that anti-terror tactics had been adopted for the use of against Americans by the private sector. According to the Washington Post, the letter was authored by Democratic Representative Hank Johnson and more than a dozen Democratic reps. The plan, which called for drawing up detailed social networks of progressive critics and sought to launch malware attacks against these political operatives, these progressive groups, was ostensibly created by the data security firm H.B. Gary Federal, who, interestingly enough, their head, I guess, resigned today, their CEO. Now, you go back and you think, how did this happen? Well, it happened because this group, Anonymous, basically broke into their system, dumped tens of thousands of emails into the public, so people got to go through it. And when they found out what was going on, you go, busted. And now we know the Chamber of Commerce to be what they are. So again, I go back to this thing with this Bradley Manning, who, leaked a bunch of these cables. They've now locked him in solitary confinement. PayPal wanted to block any money going to him because you don't want to mount a defense. They block money going to WikiLeaks because we don't want any more of this stuff coming out. It's interesting. And Paul Craig Roberts, former Reagan cabinet member, said, you know what, if we can't shut him up one way, they're probably going to kill him, speaking about Julian Assange. So I'm kind of interested to see how WikiLeaks now is being considered for the Nobel Peace Prize. Interesting stuff. And as we move forward, we're going to see more of this stuff, I think. Going back to, this what's going on in Washington. You've got the GOP hit squad, the International Chamber of Commerce out there pushing their agenda. And you've got the religious right out there pushing their agenda. Boehner was speaking to the National Association of Religious Broadcasters on Sunday, and he was attempting to make some kind of a bizarre moral case for the deep cuts that they're trying to push through the House, saying, quote,
It's immoral to rob our children's future and make them beholden to China. And I stop and I think about that for a second. Rob our children's future? You mean of all the tax dollars that you gave away to the top 2% and make them beholden to China because of the trade deals that people like you push through? Oh, okay. I'm starting to get it now. Up is down. Forward is back. Black is white. I'm getting it. Now there's a Christian group, a progressive Christian group, the Sojourners, who are looking at these cuts and saying, you know what, we need to maybe think of it in a different light. And they took out a full-page ad in Politico and asked legislators to consider the idea of what would Jesus cut? And as I've said before, I do believe a budget is a moral document. It says where your values are. It says what you believe. And this is what the folks at Sojourners have done. They've taken out this thing saying, what would Jesus cut? A budget is a moral document, they said. And they go through saying, look, you know, don't cut nutrition programs here or abroad. Don't cut international aid because we need to fight these pandemic diseases. Proven work and income supports lift families out of poverty. Don't cut those and support education, especially in low-income communities. And I bring that back to what we're doing here in Pennsylvania with these insane vouchers. These vouchers are not going to help low-income students. It's not going to happen. What this is a right-wing wet dream to privatize and profitize public education, to put money in the pockets of the big corporations at the expense of the people that they claim they're trying to help. To me, it's absolutely nuts. And I think, again, I wish people would rise up and take to the streets. You know, I look at what's going on in Wisconsin and that bill that Walker's trying to ram through. If we had that kind of engagement on every single piece of legislation, you wouldn't see the kind of craziness we've got going on in this country. If people would have read the Patriot Act, if people would have taken the time to read some of the trade agreements, NAFTA, CAFTA, you name it. This South Korea thing that Obama wants to push through. Again, I'm not in favor of. If we had that kind of engagement, maybe some of the insanity, maybe some of the inequity, maybe some of the problems that we have in this country wouldn't be as great. And, you know, if we are this grand Christian country that people tell me we are, and I don't believe that we are, I don't believe the country was founded on Judeo-Christian values. I think the country was founded by people who wanted to practice their religion and be left alone. But I think they didn't have a choice because they were pushed out onto the boat saying, good, go. But this idea that somehow we're a Christian nation, look around, man. Look at the homeless people on the street. Look at the children going to school hungry. And I know people out there say, oh, Rick, you're such a bleeding heart. No. I saw that stuff up close, firsthand it hit. You know, how many 8-year-olds? And this is why I thank goodness every day that my 8-year-old, my 4-year-old, my 2-year-old will never see the things that I've seen. Like the dead guy on the side of our house with the big heavy army green coat on in the middle of July with a needle stuck in his arm. They're never going to see that, I hope. At least not in their childhood. Because we didn't help that guy coming back from Vietnam. You know, they're never going to see the nonsense and the hatred and the things that I've seen, at least I hope. But I look at what's going on in Washington, I look at what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio, and some of the talk that's coming out of our Senate and our House, it sickens me. Because this is not the country that I grew up believing in. This is a very hateful, spiteful group of people who want to be dictators. They don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in compromise. They don't believe in discussion. They believe in my way or the highway. And Bush was just the minor step in that direction. As bad as you thought Bush was, the Walker, Kasich, Scott, you name it, that crowd is worse. And we're heading down that road. And it's It's insane. You look at this guy up in Maine, this Paul LePage. You remember back during the election, he said, oh, you know, we're going to have new ideas for the state of Maine. We're going to get Maine working again. Yet you look at his budget that he just came out with, and you know what? It's all about slashing things for you and people like you and me and handing out big checks for his campaign donors. The wealthy going to do real well. Slew of tax cuts for them. Massive cutbacks for public services. Gutting public employee benefits and pensions. In fact, you know, they're going to raise the retirement age of public workers from 62 to 65. They're going to cut Maine's prescription drug and health care coverage for working parents. So that, again, like they did here in Pennsylvania. The low-income workers getting screwed again, man. They're going to end the property tax relief that helped 75,000 middle-income people who live in Maine. You know, again, you know, sticking it to the little guy. Why? Well, obviously. The folks at the top need more. In fact, if you made over $360,000, you're going to get a $2,700, almost a $2,800 windfall. Congratulations. Now, if you made under $20,000, you'll see about five bucks. So, congratulations. I'm going to take a quick break. We're right back after this to wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people come to talk.
David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I'll give my head to the new Constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. It's not a dream that the change is all around. Make a mighty tar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, we have the podcast right there on our website for your entertainment, for your enjoyment, and your convenience. Take it with you wherever you go. And if you got a comment, question, something on your mind, critique, love those, especially the nasty ones, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Love the debate. It seems Chris Dodd has found a job. I remember the former Democratic senator from Connecticut. Turns out Chris is going to take a job as the next CEO of the Motion Picture Association of America, according to the Hollywood Reporter. He will be replacing former CEO Dan Glickman as the head honcho and leading lobbyist for the trade group. Dodd, who retired in January, served in the Senate since 1981, and he has been a major power broker. Again, you know, you look at Chris and some of the weird things going on with the banking stuff, and maybe it was time for him to go along, and I guess a good thing he finally got a job. Here's an interesting story that just came to me. You remember during the Academy Awards, the one guy, Craig Ferguson, said not one person has been charged in the banking thing, nothing on Wall Street, nothing yet? Well, the AP is reporting that there's going to be someone charged, an ex-Goldman director charged with insider trading. They're saying, quote, depicting moment-to-moment detail, the Securities and Exchange Commission on Tuesday laid out civil fraud charges linking a former Goldman Sachs board member to the biggest hedge fund insider trading case ever. They say it's a portrait of corporate board meeting leading to secret phone calls, to stock trading orders, and finally to huge illicit profits made within hours. The SEC charged Raja Gupta, who has served on boards of Procter & Gamble and the parent company for American Airlines. Gupta was also a guest at President Barack Obama's first state dinner. According to the SEC now, this is what the AP is reporting. Gupta passed along privileged financial information at the height of the financial crisis that helped enrich the target of the government sweeping probe, and that target is a guy named Raj Rajaman. Evidently, they were talking about Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway and the wanting to invest $5 billion into the behemoth. Turns out he made a whole bunch of money. Long story short, he could face, if everything they say, and it's a long litany of stuff here, he could face 185 years in prison, which I think is kind of interesting. Maybe that would be a good thing. And maybe what we need is a whole slew of these so that this kind of stuff doesn't happen again, at least for a while. Because every time we seem to loosen up the reins, you get people who, you know, once they get their hand in the cookie jar, you know, one cookie's not enough. I had a friend who sent me an email, kind of a joke, wrote, there's a CEO, a union worker, and a teabagger sitting at a table. And there's a dozen cookies on the table. And the CEO reaches across and grabs all 12 cookies, looks at the teabagger and says, "Look out for that union guy. He's going to go after that crumb of yours." And that's kind of what's happened to our economy. What's happened is you've had the big CEOs, the wealth class has taken all of it. They want it all, man. And what we're fighting over are the crumbs. And you look at what's going on, and you really can't argue with that too much. Can't argue with that at all. Let's talk about some other news around the country today. President Obama spoke out in support of public employees' collective bargaining rights. It's about time. He was at a meeting of the National Governors Association where he said, "I don't think it does anybody any good when public employees are denigrated or vilified or their rights are infringed upon. We need to attract the best and the brightest to public service in these times demand it." I go back to what the Montana governor said. And this is, it's an excellent point that he made that we talked about yesterday. How do you run a business? Any business. I don't care what it is. And the state is like a business. It's providing a service. It's providing a good. How do you run that business? How do you keep the morale of your employees up when everybody, including you, are telling them that they're lazy and no good and shiftless and they make too much and we're going to slice your pay and we're going to lay you off? How are you expected to come to work in a good mood and say, "Yep, I'm going to give it 100% today"? I mean, imagine if, you know, and I've been in this situation before. I had a job years ago where, you know, look, they were through some strife. They were going to be getting rid of just about everybody, and getting up every day going into that place was tough. I remember it. And eventually, you know, you went on to somewhere else. So I'm telling you, I agree with the Montana governor. That's no way to run a business. And finally, the president again has tacitly come out in favor. He would go to Madison. I wish he would make a firm stance, but you can't do that when you're kissing up to the business community, I guess. And I know, Rick, you're being too hard on the president. Yeah, I know. A nonpartisan Moody's Analytics released an economic analysis yesterday, which we talked about, finding that Republican efforts to cut billions of dollars from our budget this year could result in the losses of as many as 700,000 jobs by the end of next year. Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi projected that the Republican proposal would cut real GDP by 0.5% in 2011 and 0.2% in 2012. Now, remember, what we talk about often is, you know, you can give businesses a tax cut. You can give them all the tax cuts you want. That's not going to make them hire anybody. They've got nothing to make then. What they've got is they've got some free money. And they go, oh, boy, I got free money. What am I going to do with it? Maybe I'll go on vacation. Or maybe I'll buy the missus that diamond ring she's always wanted. They're not going to say, oh, gee, there's a guy walking down the street. I'm feeling benevolent today. I should hire him. You've got nothing for him to do. What you need to have is demand. So what we need our government to be doing is, oh, I don't know, building roads and bridges and high-speed rail and wind farms and solar banks and all the things that we need as a society. Maybe hiring some more cheers, building schools, all that kind of stuff. Good stuff. Creating demand, getting that machine running so that the entrepreneur out there goes, you know what? I can fill that demand. And the government's going to, or somebody's going to buy my product. So I better hire somebody to make my product so I can make a profit off of it. Seems pretty simple to me. Anyway, according to a new poll, Americans are divided over who would be to blame for a potential government shutdown. While 46% said they blame congressional Republicans before the impending shutdown in 1995, today 36% say Republicans would be at fault and 35% would blame the Obama administration. Again, it's not the Obama administration who can't get the bill through the House and get what they want done. Look, at the end of the day, you've got Republicans who really have this, they don't have a scalpel. What they've come with is a chainsaw. They want to hack our budget. They want to destroy any social spending so that they can say, look, we cut the budget. But as Zandi pointed out, the guy from Moody's, it's going to cost us 700,000 jobs, which in turn is going to cost us a boatload of tax revenue. Again, not too bright. Ideological, yes. Not too bright, though. Not thinking, again, good at sloganeering, good at campaigning, not very good at governing. The Republican Party. The U.S. has blocked $30 billion in Libyan government assets since President Obama announced his executive order late Friday night imposing unilateral sanctions on the Gaddafi regime. This is the largest amount of foreign assets ever seized in an American sanctions action, and I think it's about time. It's time for Muammar to go. The only thing I wish the media, and I'll leave you with this thought, I wish the mainstream media would just come up with one spelling for Gaddafi. It's either with a Q, a K, or a G. Make up your mind. It can't be all three. Have a great night. Solidarity to our brothers in Ohio and brothers and sisters in Ohio and Wisconsin. We're back here tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio.